Good morning, gentlemen. Would one really get some of your insight in the future? Must understand that our members are quite fairly new, so that's why I wanted to reflect on the state of the department itself. And we have national treasury around here. Mr. Pascalvin, good morning, sir. I would rely on your comments to give some of our members some insight of how things are going in the department. Also, key to that is how do you, the fact of the military veterans being incorporated, what do you think about that? Give us some sight of what we could do. But let me welcome everybody today. And the gentlemen from the department, good morning, sir. Good morning, sir, with your delegation. I'll allow you and give you an opportunity to introduce them to the honorable members so that you can start. Okay. Bye. Thank you very much, honorable chairperson, honorable members of the portfolio committee. This first engagement, formal engagement with the fourth parliament and the newly elected portfolio committee of defense. I am with colleagues from the Department of Defense, whom I will let introduce themselves, starting to my right, the Chief Financial Officer, to my left, Dr. George Kamete, Chief Defense Policy Strategy and Planning. To her immediate left, Lieutenant General Rina van Rensburg, Chief of Corporate Staff in the SNDF. To his left, Lieutenant General PJ Ramlaka, the Surgeon General, South African Military Health Services. Behind General van Rensburg, Mr. Sumtani Lana, is the Chief Director of Strategic Management. Behind him, Mr. Ratumo is the head of the Ministerial Services component. Colonel van der Post, next to Mr. Lana, and then to the extreme left, Brigadier General Chris Wu. And the other two remaining members of the DOD team are Nandine Saluba, she's the Director of Programs and Planning, and to her right is Rear Admiral Alan Green, he's the Director of Military Strategy, and that is the team from the Department of Defense. Can I also allow members just to introduce themselves so that we could? I'm the amazing boy, the chairperson of the committee.
I am Nandolo, a member of the committee.
Lomfane Lemabesha, a member of the committee.
I'm Benny Mulane, a new member of this committee.
I'm the mayor, I'm the chairman of the committee.
Jen Lerman, member of the committee.
Jacob Bumpatil, a member of the committee.
Now, provided with that, I think we can start the process. Secretary of Defense, I know that you have sent a letter to me that he has sent a document out called the strategic plan. But what he says in the letter is that is just a draft at this particular moment. It's not yet a full one. But I've tried to read it. I've seen that the minister there have written to try to say both departments, both areas, like defense and military veterans. But if you go into the content of the document, not much elaboration is taking place. So I'm assuming that's why you see the draft. It doesn't represent the whole fully fledged department itself. It does really just talk about defense. So in this fourth parliament, we are talking about one area, which is defense and military veterans. So the strategic plan, as we have said earlier, it helps to capture that particular development. So it is not yet in the document itself. It's more talking about defense. So it is a draft that members can familiarize themselves about what is going on. And that's what the sector is saying, that he has sent a letter to say to us, it is a drought because he doesn't want you to see what is going on in the department. Am I correct?
Yes, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Just to acknowledge two additional members who are with us, Thabo Kikamba, who is our parliamentary officer, as well as Mr. Badinson, who's also in the ministry. Honorable Chair, we will be presenting to you, as duly submitted, our 2009-2010-2011-2012 strategic business plan for that medium-term expenditure framework period. Now, the aim of our presentation will be to brief you on this strategic business plan for this financial year period that we have indicated. And the scope that we'll cover will basically provide you with an overview of the strategic business plan, the layout of the plan, and the overview of the chapters, as well as the budget allocation and trends. And then we'll add two more, which are basically separate presentations. The first part of which will be reflecting on the recommendations that were made by the portfolio committee on the 2008-2009. Strategic business plan, and thereafter we'll then make a concluding remark. Okay, insofar as the overview of the strategic business plan is concerned, for us it's basically a culmination of a process that initiated in October 2007 in line with the overall government planning framework, and we submitted these plans in April 2008. Internally within the department, we had the technical evaluation through the DFEBAC process. The DFEBAC is the Departmental Planning, Budget and Evaluation Committee, which we constitute and actually sit 3 to 4 times in the year just to look at our budget trends, where do we need to make adjustments and reallocation. So we had that process through the DFEBAC process in June 2008. And then also amended them to ensure that we included the APEC priorities in November 2008, and finally submitting in January 2009 with a further account on consideration of the budget cuts that were effected in February 2009. The APEC priorities are those priorities that were handed down from the presidency, which are cross-cutting to all of government. And insofar as we are defense is concerned, we had three major APEC priorities, but we will not report on that at this stage. This new strategic business plan is made up of three chapters, and then we then further on have output tables as appendices. In chapters 1 to 2, we are aligning to the National Treasury requirements that ensure that we align with the broader government priorities. And then, of course, chapter 3, then gives account of the Department of Defense output in its endeavor to fulfill the government's requirements to protect the people of the Republic of South Africa. We translate this output into programs which are articulated then in Vote 19, which is the vote that we'll be having on the 26th of June this year. We then further give a detailed coverage of each program, including the administration program. And that forms the first part of the main program. And then also make a reflection on selected operations as well as performance indicators for the program as linked from the Estimate of National Expenditure, the ELE. And then we conclude that overview with a presentation of risks that we will provide to you as corporate risks that we face. Now, first, insofar as the layout of the strategic business plan is concerned, Chapter 1 covers the strategic overview, Chapter 2, the medium-term strategic focus, Chapter 3, the overview of the programs, which will go into whether landward, air, medical, military health, and so on. And then from there on, we go into the detailed information on the output, and this is presented or reflected in the appendices. As part of the strategic overview, we'll cover our vision, mission, strategic objectives, the macro structure as approved on the 15th of August 2008, the mission structure sector, what our leader system is, the balance scorecard as a performance management instrument, what our departmental strategies are, as well as the strategic planning process. It's prudent at this stage to indicate just to give an overview of the macro-organizational design, which we will not go into detail on. Suffice to say, it reflects the Minister of Defense and then the Department of Defense, and within that, the two main elements, which is the Defense Secretariat and the South African National Defense Force, both constituting the Department of Defense. And then you'll see below that the various divisions in the Defense Secretariat, and then on the South African National Defense Force side, the divisions and services in the South African National Defense Force. Chapter 1 on the strategic overview then, what are our mission success factors? Our mission success factors are as follows. Firstly, that there is national consensus on defense. And this is drawn from the first parliament, this in the fourth parliament. Secondly, excellent strategic direction. Thirdly, excellent resource management. Fourth, effective combat forces and support forces. Then fourth, professionalism in the conduct of operations. And then successful implementation of the transformation process. Our value system is categorized into individual as well as organizational value. Now the strategic overview, that first chapter, basically captures, and we summarize this from the main document, it basically captures the functions of the Secretary for Defense and the Chief of the South African National Defense Force, emanating from the Constitution as well as the various pieces of legislation, primarily the Defense Act as well as the other legislation, Public Finance Management Act, Public Service Act, and so on. Secondly, the Department of Defense Balance Scorecard. The Balance Scorecard is being introduced in phases in order to improve our performance management. And then thirdly, the strategies, and these consist of the following. The defense strategy, which takes into cognizance the need for the Department of Defense to respond to the geostrategic and macroeconomic global imperatives, as well as deepen and institutionalizing civil-military relations. Secondly, as an integral part of the Department of Defense strategies, military strategy, and then thirdly, the support strategy. Chairperson, honorable members, chapter 2 delves into the medium-term strategic focus, and the medium-term strategic focus chapter provides the detail on the following. First, on the strategic focus for the Department of Defense. Secondly, alignment of the Department of Defense with government priorities. Thirdly, the ministerial priorities. And then fourth, the legislative changes that are likely to influence program spending plans over the medium-term expenditure framework period. And then fifth, budget allocations, expenditure trends, and analysis of the 09-2010 budget allocation, and then risk management approach and assessment, and lastly, service delivery improvement program. Now, to go into a bit of detail on the strategic focus, we cover the areas concerned with migration to an affordable, sustainable, and mandate-driven force design and structure. So as to enable fulfillment of ordered commitments and providing support to government diplomatic initiatives. Secondly, still as part of the strategy focus, embracing government initiatives and priorities aimed at combating poverty in order to promote development, peace and stability regionally and continentally through participation in peace missions, confidence and security building bilateral fora, continental peace and security structures, primarily the African Union and the Southern African Development Community, as well as to ensure systematic phased withdrawal from internal deployment in support of the South African police, although this is a matter that is under continuous review. Still, on Chapter 2 of the medium-term strategy focus, alignment with government priorities. As part of the alignment with government priorities, our department participates in cabinet clusters as well as departmental directors general cluster, and there we say international relations, peace and security cluster with regard to embracing the African agenda. The department is co-chair as well as the ministry is co-chair with the Foreign Affairs or International Relations Ministry in this particular cluster. Secondly, the Justice, Crime Prevention and Security cluster. We participate in that as a key member with respect to the need to keep focus on the revitalization of the criminal justice system as well as the elements that affect us as part of the role that we play in support of the police in internal operations and deployment. Thirdly, we also participate in the economic cluster, and the economic cluster is primarily led by the Department of Trade and Industry or the Ministry of Trade and Industry. We participate within that cluster of government to provide us with the role as part of the economic diplomacy, as well as looking at how do we make our input as part of the redefinition of the defense industry strategy, as part of the overall national industry strategy. And then the fourth, the governance and administration cluster, which is primarily led and chaired by the Public Service and Administration Ministry and Department. This basically to provide us for improvement of our machinery and governance and ensure that we're truly aligned as part of the overall national governance framework as set by the Ministry of Public Service and Administration. The other point that relates to alignment with government priorities is the plans that we have, which started and provided. These have been aligned with the Minister of Defense's priorities, as well as cabinet cluster priorities and the APEC priorities that was referred to earlier. On legislation, and this is still part of the medium-term strategic framework, insofar as legislation that we intend to submit to Cabinet and Parliament, which will definitely have an influence on future spending, especially as already in the process, the Military Discipline Bill, the Defense Amendment Bill, the Geneva Convention Bill, as well as the regulations or any legislative changes, in fact, which will need to, part of the Defense Amendment Bill, will include the new directive to create the military veterans entity. And then the regulations that will be tabled during this year will be the general regulations in terms of Section 82 of the Defense Act of 2002, and then also the amendment, the National Conventional Arms Control Amendment Act. Within that context, the development of regulations to give effect to the NCACC Act. On the Minister's priorities, these were issued during the 08-09 financial year. Insofar as this strategic business plan is concerned, they remain unchanged. Suffice to say, they add a new element of the creation of a military reference entity, and that may not be reflected there, but you see it when you then deal with the second part of the presentation. And then also the rejuvenation and upgrades of the landward program, and then the infrastructure and Department of Defense West Regiment, and then thirdly the defense strategy that responds to our department's current and emerging needs, and then revitalization of the reserve, as well as information and technology. On risk management, the approach that we take is that the risk management is on constant review to ensure that we are in compliance with the Public Finance Management Act as well as the National Public Sector Risk Management Framework and the regulations to the Public Finance Management Act. Secondly, as part of our risk assessment, we identify them as they relate to the strategic objectives of our Department of Defense. And just to capture in a nutshell the overarching risks that affect the operations of the Department of Defense, it's firstly the continued deterioration of infrastructure, equipment and facilities due to insufficient funding for maintenance and repairs, but also due to the backlog on the part of the entities outside of defense that have this mandate to do such maintenance and repairs of our facilities and infrastructure. Secondly, the continuous loss of skills to the private sector or also other entities of the public sector, whether parastatal or other departments of state. And then thirdly, the provision of updated defense-related internal administrative systems for finance, for human resources, and also for procurement. And this we are dealing with not only internally as ourselves, but as part of the overall government framework to introduce an enhanced system that ensures integrated finance, human resource, and procurement. And then the other risks, servicing of memorandum of understanding. We have memorandum of understanding with many countries, but the servicing thereof is proving to be a challenge. Chairperson, honorable members, on the service delivery improvement plan, in line with the public service and administration requirements, we identified two programs during the 2008-2009, which we are tracking over time. And these programs, which we have provided in line with the template as issued by the Public Service and Administration Department, relate to two elements. Firstly, the balance scorecard, which is aimed at improving our efficiency, effectiveness, and equity in the delivery of our output. Secondly, the MSDS. MSDS, that is the Military Skills Development System, which is focusing on economic participation of youth within the military, and that is a program that is ongoing. Chapter 3, which provides the overview of the program, Chairperson and Honorable Members, presents the outputs that define how the department operationalizes its mandate in terms of our core business, force readiness, force support, and force employment. Secondly, it further presents the translation of the output in terms of programs that have been articulated in Goal 19, which will be dealt with on the 26th of June, 2009. Thirdly, it provides also the selected trendable indicators within that particular chapter, and then measurable objectives that are extracted from the strategic plan and highlighted under each program. Now, what are our outputs? The outputs provided by the Department of Defense in terms of our mandate to government and from government include defense commitments, which defense commitments include operations that are ongoing in nature during the year and for which plans and financial provision can and have been made in advance. Secondly, operations that must be executed during the year and if unforeseeable for which no provision has not been made. And then thirdly, joint interdepartmental and multinational exercises that are required during the year to prepare forces for operations. And then the other element with respect to our output relates to landward defense capabilities, and then following that, air defense capabilities, maritime defense capabilities, military health capabilities as part of the integral support to the armed forces, and then defense diplomacy, which includes, in concrete terms, the deployment of our defense attachés throughout the world, the servicing of defense-related memoranda of understanding, and also participation in the defense and security structures of the United Nations, the African Union, as well as the Southern African Development Community, SADC. Still as part of our output, the provision of defense-related policy and ministerial advice, and then providing not only for the defense force, but for the entire government, cryptographic security services, and then also housing the National Codification Bureau, and then furthermore provision of appropriate framework for sound policy direction, advice, and systematic monitoring and evaluation, and then providing defense-related capabilities that respond to the needs of South Africa within the evolving policy and national priority strategy that characterize this developmental stage. Now, the overview of our programs, insofar as the outputs are concerned, have been translated into the programs that will be reflected in Vote 19. And these are as follows. Firstly, administration. Within administration, this cuts across both the Secretariat for Defense as well as the South African National Defense Force and the Ministry of Defense. And then a big chunk of the program, the landward defense, which forms the bulk of the South African National Defense Force. And then air defense, after that maritime defense, primarily the Navy, and then military health support, and then defense intelligence, general support, as well as self-employment. Firstly, on the first chapter on administration, the Defense Administration Program primarily conducts policy development, management, and administration of the department, and is therefore, as you see, even in the structure, macro organizational structure, reflected right at the headquarters ministry as well as level two, that is the Department of Defense. The measurable objectives of the administration program cover the following areas. Firstly, the provision of sound defense direction and advice. Secondly, providing defense-related social responsibilities. Thirdly, developing consensus on defense. Fourth, providing sound policy and administration. And then, furthermore, provision of contingency-ready defense capabilities. And then a framework for systematic monitoring and evaluation. Now, the coverage of this administration program, as already referred, is made up of different sub-programs. As indicated, the administration program is right at the top, and it covers the ministerial direction, as the sub-program and the responsibility for that is the political head, that is the minister and the deputy minister, and then the departmental direction, as provided by the head of department and accounting officer, Secretary for Defense, and then the South African National Defense Force Command and Control, as provided for by the chief of the South African National Defense Force. And then the policy and planning sub-program as provided for in the entities, defense policy, defense strategy, policy and plan, and then also the military policy, strategy and plan, respectively under the chief of defense, policy, strategy and plans to my left, and also further left, chief of corporate staff. Financial services to my right, as provided for by the chief financial officer. Furthermore, still as part of the administration program, the acquisition services, and these provided for by the chief materials, and then technology development and supply chain management. Those are all within the acquisition services, and inspection services as provided by the inspector general, and an entity that is in the process of being created of the internal audit. And then at the NDF command and control, this basically by the office of the chief of the South African National Defense Force. Human Resources Support Service, they just joined that chief of human resources to provide that service, as well as the subdivision under the chief of human resources. Legal Services, by the chief of defense legal services, and the office of the adjutant general. And then religious services, provided by the chaplain general of the South African National Defense Force, communication services by the head of communication in the ministry, but with a line into the department through the defense corporate communication. So far as defense reserve direction is concerned, through the chief of defense reserve, and then the defense foreign relations program, through the chief defense foreign relations, and then chief defense international affairs, and property management, as a responsibility of the chief of logistics. So chapter 3 on landward defense has its purpose as to provide prepared and supported landward defense capabilities for the defense and protection of South Africa. Now, the outputs of the landward defense capabilities are primarily executed by the South African Army. The objectives and measures for it are to provide 3 infantry battalions a year for external deployment, 1 air landed battalion, and 2 multi-role battalions in reserve, and 4 battalions involved in exercises. Secondly, as part of the objectives and measures of the landward defense, exercising 1 tank regiment and 1 armored car regiment a year. Thirdly, exercising 1 composite artillery regiment and 1 light, that is a parachute artillery battery, and having 1 light infant light artillery battery in reserve per year. Still on the landward defense objectives and measures, exercising 1 air defense artillery regiment and 1 light parachute air defense artillery battery, and having 1 light air defense artillery battery in reserve per year. And then providing 3 engineer squadrons for external deployment, 1 composite engineer squadron for internal reserve, and exercising 1 light parachute engineer squadron a year. And then lastly, providing 2 signal regiments for external deployment, for internal reserves, as well as involvement in exercises. Honorable Chair and the committee, moving on to the air defense program, which is chapter 3. The purpose of the air defense program provides prepared and supported air defense capabilities for the defense and protection of South Africa. Now, the outputs of the air defense program are to provide air defense capabilities, and the objectives and measures thereof cover firstly 4 helicopter squadrons and 1 combat support squadron a year. Secondly, 3 medium transport squadrons, 1 maritime and transport squadron, 1 light transport squadron, and 9 reserve squadrons at the required readiness levels per year. And then thirdly, 1 air combat squadron a year, and then fourth, a 24-hour air command and control capability. And as with the landward, we have an output table that will indicate the details of that. On chapter 3, on the maritime defense, the purpose of maritime defense program is to provide prepared and supported maritime defense capabilities for defense and protection of the RSA. And then also, insofar as outputs are concerned, to provide maritime defense capabilities. The objectives and measures of the maritime defense program, 4 of them. The first one is to provide a surface combat capability of 4 frigates, which we have acquired, 1 combat support vessel, 3 offshore patrol vessels, 3 inshore patrol vessels, and a maritime reaction squadron within each annual operational cycle. Secondly, as part of maritime defense, to provide a subsurface combat capability of 3 submarines in each annual operational cycle. And then thirdly, to provide 2 mine countermeasure systems in each annual operational cycle to ensure safe access to South African harbors and where mine clearance may be required to do so. And then fourth, ongoing hydrographic survey capabilities to ensure safe navigation in charging areas and meet international obligations, of which we are a member of the International Hydrographic Organization. Still on the chapter 3 of the program, military support, as represented by the Surgeon General. And the military support program provides prepared and supported health capabilities and service for the defense and protection of South Africa. The output thereof are military services and capabilities, objectives and measures are as follows. They are covered by 2 main elements. Firstly, health support capabilities of 5 medical battalion groups, including 1 specialist medical battalion group for deployed and contingency forces. And then secondly, a ministerial service which provides for a comprehensive multidisciplinary health service to a projected patient population of 230,000 members per year. That includes dependents. On chapter 3 still, with respect to the defense intelligence program in the administration, the defense intelligence program provides the defense intelligence and counterintelligence capability. And that is the purpose for its existence. Its outputs are defense intelligence and counterintelligence capabilities in line with the constitution and legislation. And then the objectives and measures will be dealt with in association with the committee when so required, as well as the sister committee on defense and the committee on intelligence. On chapter 3, furthermore, general support. The general support program provides general support capabilities and services to the department, and its outputs are general support capabilities as encapsulated within the logistics division, military police agencies, the command management and information, that is CMI, technology development, the supporting the entities, that is the military support and training team, as well as departmental support. The measurable objectives of the general support program and services are to ensure 90% serviceability of deployed equipment and by providing a joint logistical operational support group. But also second is repairing and maintaining the department's infrastructure at least 33 bases as identified as a priority over the next 3 years. And broken down as follows, 12 in 2009-10 financial year, 9 in the next financial year, 2010-11, and 12 in 2011-12. And then also to provide the department with key information and communication systems, that is the command management and information systems subdivision, to ensure that the mainframe service is available 98% of the time, and also the one that is the wide area network 95% of the time. This we also do as supported by the State Information Technology Agency, etc. Furthermore, the other objectives and measures of the general support program are still as part of the information communication system solution. This is done also through and in accordance with our master plan, that is the Defense Enterprise Information Systems Master Plan, the DATE Master Plan, healthcare program, and project milestones and associated deliverables. And then furthermore, which is mainly within the military police agency and the legal entity, reducing the number of new criminal cases under investigation by the military police by 5% a year, and also sustaining one forward company for deployment, and 22 area offices, 22 detachments for investigations and crime prevention, and 2 military correctional facilities. On forced employment, moving on from the general administration program, on forced employment, the purpose of the forced employment mainly deals with the Joint Operations Division, which provides and employs defense capabilities, including an operational capability to successfully conduct all operations of a joint and a multinational military exercise mission. Now the outputs relate to operations and joint multinational exercises, but how are the measurable, the objectives measured? They are measured firstly by providing an employee special operations capability, for which there is a special operations subdivision in accordance with national requirements. Secondly, conducting on average or an average of 12 external peace missions per year in accordance with requirements to promote peace and security. And this varies from size and shape. And then conducting 24 military force preparation exercises over the next 3 year period, excluding the special force exercises. And then also undertaking missions in support of other government departments and complying with international obligations. Now, what is the desired end state? The desired end state is to establish through our strategy a credible force design which has fully equipped capabilities and which capabilities can be encapsulated in either a single unit like a ship or a number of units which form a battalion group. Also, as part of the desired end state, it's foreseen that the implementation of our strategy will be a long-term program which will result in a virtually fully capable SANDF. And most of the focus will be on the landward defense systems as we go into the future, primarily the South African Army. And then also the attainment of this credible force design will position the SANDF to meet all commitments as required by government. And then way forward with respect to the strategic business plan is the printing, of course, as we've done, of the strategic business plan, which will commence in earnest in preparation for tabling, as well as then looking forward for the budget vote. Now, Chairperson, we've concluded the main part of the presentation. We'd like to move into the second part, which still forms part of the strategic business plan, and which is the budget. The facts and figures of the 2009-2010 budget, first highlighting the budgetary process. And with respect to the budgetary process, the 2009-2010 budget process started in 2007 and included the following elements. Planning and budgeting guidelines, which were issued by the Minister as the Accounting Officer in September 2007. The plan and as well as the estimate of expenditure evaluation, that was in May and June 2008. The medium-term expenditure committee submission with policy proposals to the National Treasury, that was engaged in August 2008. The deliberations of the MTEC medium-term expenditure committee in September 2008, and then which was then followed on a month later in November 2008, by the first letter of allocation, and then the final letter of allocation in January 2009, and with expenditure to commence in the new financial year, 1st April 2009. Chair Committee, would like to illustrate to you what the budget trends have been over the years, without going into any detail, just to show you the extent of the budget trends of the allocation to defense, and you'll see there the red line as well as the blue line. The red line being the percentage of the defense budget to the gross domestic product, GDP, and then the blue line being a percentage of government expenditure, that is allocation to defense vis-a-vis government expenditure. Without going into that detail, but what you clearly see is the sharp decline in the budget over the years. We've simply taken a 2-year period. Furthermore, now, what has been the effect of what you just illustrated of the defense budget plan over the years? The effects have been that the impact of the diminishing budget has been negative on operations and the acquisition of new equipment, as well as integration of such equipment that has been acquired. And then also the requirement that we fully implement government policies and peace support operations. This committee in the last parliament, the third parliament, during August, sharply indicated that and proposed that the budget should be increased from the current percentage of the GDP, 1.3 to 1.7 of the GDP. Currently, we are standing at 1.3 of the GDP. Now, this negativity impacts specifically, and these are not the only areas, but just to highlight, the already declining combat capabilities. Secondly, operationalization of the newly acquired prime mission equipment, what I was talking about earlier in terms of the integration of the new equipment. Thirdly, force preparation, that is primarily your training and preparation of the forces for deployment and operation. And fourthly, the ability to support government foreign policy initiatives. Now, what has been our baseline allocation? Our baseline allocation is as indicated in terms of the program that we went into detail about. Starting with the administration program, which you'll see we've made four columns, the first of which just indicates the history, that is the immediate past financial year, and then the next one is the current financial year, which has started in April, and then the next two in the full MCE period. And for this financial year, the administration program receives 2.8 billion, and the next will be 3.1, and the next 3.5. Landward defense program receives 8.7 billion for this 2009-10 financial year, and 2010 9.5, 2011 9.9. Air defense, that was the last financial year, 10 billion, 10.2 billion, and then in 2010, 8.8 billion, and then increase again to 9.4 billion. And then the maritime defense, 1.9 billion for this current financial year, 2.1 in 2010, 2.1 years, and 2.145 in 2011. And then for military support, 2.4 billion for the current financial year, and the next financial year, 2.6, and the next one, 2.791. Defense intelligence, 589 million, and then 612, and then in the 2011-12, 646 million. And then the general support program, 3.3 billion for this financial year, and then for 2010-11, 3.6, and then for 2011, 3.9 billion. Forced employment has received 1.8 billion, 1.801, and then 1.861 for 2010-11, and 1.9 billion for 2011-12. And of course, the total there has reflected, if I take from the last financial year, 28 billion, 28.2, the current 32 billion, and then the next still 32 billion with a slight increase with a few hundred million, and then in 2011 at 34 billion, 34.4 billion. Now, Chair, before I go to baseline allocation, I should indicate that in that total allocation for the current 2009-10, 2010-11, 2011-12 allocation, there is no allocation for the military veterans. I thought that should indicate that upfront. There is not a cent allocated for military veterans. Now, for the 2009 baseline allocation, this is how the economic classification and the expenditure plan is like. That's the current payment on compensation of employees, and you see there also with the put in the last financial year, just to give you a sense of the historical trend vis-a-vis the medium-term expenditure framework period that we're getting into, or just gotten into this financial year. You will see we've tried to indicate to you the growth in percentage, or even a reduction in certain cases, and just to take that category without breaking it down, 12.18%, and then yes, 9-10, that is 20 billion as part of the current payments, and then 2010-11, 21.7 billion, and then 2011-12, 23 billion. And that includes as current payments, compensation of employees, basically salary bill, goods and services. And then on transfers and subsidies, these are transfers and subsidies that we are obliged to undertake as part of statutory requirements. First is transfer to provinces and municipalities where we have a footprint throughout the country. either through the regional attorneys, the ladies, and so on, these are standing at zero for now, and then for the MTF period, and then insofar as departmental agencies or accounts and concerned, is reflected there, and there is a growth of 13.83%. Illustrated in 10 million now, 9.2 in 2011-12, and then 2011 with that figure. And then public corporations, private enterprises, that is the figure. This is basically the transfer payments that we make to entities that fall under the Ministry of Defense and Ministry of Defense, as well as the Department of Defense and Ministry of Defense, primarily AMSCO, the Customs Control Board, and so on. And then only non-profit institutions, these are basically the transfers that we make to entities that we collaborate with, whether your Red Cross and so on, those kind of entities. And then households, 33.73% increase of that reflected in that amount of money. Now, insofar as the payment for capital assets is concerned, the payment for capital assets, with respect to payment for capital assets, this is mainly divided in those four areas. This is broken down the payment for capital assets into buildings or fixed structures, and you will see a definite increase there. Machinery and equipment, cultivated assets, software or intangible assets, as well as specialized military assets. And the figures are there as indicated. The growth is far more than 100% with respect to this particular economic classification. And this also is impacted on by the newly introduced legislation with respect to the treatment of assets and how assets and buildings must then be classified. So those are the figures that indicate for 0910, 369 million, 265, 429. And then machinery and equipment, 262, 261, 254. Nothing for calculated assets. Software intangible assets, that has decreased significantly, 253 for 0910, 276, 296, and specialized military assets, 29. So that brings us to then 34 billion if you look at the outer end of the medium term expenditure framework, that is 2011-12. Insofar as medium term expenditure framework allocations are concerned, for 0910 to 2011-12, the description firstly is departmental baseline for the 08 medium term expenditure framework allocation. For 10-11, 9-10, sorry, 9-10, 29.8, 10-11, 32, 11-12, 34, and then so far as additional funds allocated to the baseline, these are specifically in those five areas: continuation training for reserve. You'll see that for the 9-10, there is no allocation, but there's an allocation for 2010-11 and then 2011-12. Infrastructure. Primarily, that is the redevelopment or reconstruction of the Waterloo Air Force Base runway as well as hangar facility. That is a process that started already in 2008 and we hope will be concluded by 2010. Inflation-related adjustments, that is primarily compensation of employees, salaries, 377, 403, and 420 respectively. And then also adjustments insofar as the payment for capital assets is concerned, for 0910, 24 million, 48 million, and 10-11, and 11-12, 62 million. And then adjustments for fuel, current 56.1, and then the next financial year 2010-11 is 28 million, and then there's no allocation yet for 2011, and it's likely to increase quite sharply at that point. Insofar as adjustment to baseline that we have received, 2.1 billion for the 09-10 financial year, and then 2010-11, 222, and none so far allocated for 2011-12. And these primarily relate to the special defense account, as reflected there. The special defense account is a separate account to the general defense account that we have. And the special defense account we use primarily for major capital acquisition projects, especially in the equipment, multi-year project, equipment project. So that is the adjustment that has been given. And then for the 2009 allocation, as of November 08, as we indicated earlier on, for 09-10, it was 32.7664, and then for 2010-11, 33 billion, and then for 2011, 35. And then for the final, in the final letter of allocation, you will see that there was a reduction from that 32.76 to now, as we speak, with the figure that you saw earlier, 32 billion for this 09-10, and then for 10-11, 32.3, and then 34.4 in 2011-12. So, in overall terms, the allocation has reduced this 2009-2010 financial year that we're in, and for the medium term expenditure framework, reduced by 1.98 billion. And that is broken down as follows. In this current financial year, 2009-10, a cut by 740 million, 2010-11, a cut by 644 million, and in 2011, 595. Now, Chair, honorable members, I should place this cut in context. This is a cut that was effected by government across all the boards, to all national departments and provincial administrations, as part of an effort to ensure that we reduce the country's budget deficit. But for us, that is what has been the result thereof, to make up 17 billion as required by national reserves for this medium-term expenditure framework given. Now, as part of that initiative and linked with this, the directive at the macro level from National Treasury with respect to the reduction to effect those figures was specifically to then zoom in on the particular area of compensation of employees. Now, compensation of employees, in addition to those figures, basically to reduce the improvement in conditions of service and carry through costs due to adjustments in projected salary increase. And the 09-10, the financial year, is to then reduce that by 77 million, and then 2010-11, 117, 2011-12, 125. Secondly, on goods and services, to then reduce for this current financial year by 293 million, and the next one, 2010-11, 326. And 2011-12, 373 million. And then insofar as transfer to public corporations is concerned, within the context of the Special Defense Account, SDA, for 09-10, 4 million, 4.1, 2010-11, 6.2, 2011-12, 6.5. And then on transfer to public corporations, this, as with every other department, we belong to SITA, that is the Skills Education and Training Authority. We are a member of that, and we pay our dues through that, which is 0.5% of the salary base. That is 62 million for 09-10, 62 for 92 for 10-11, 97 for 11-12. And say this amount is directly linked to our payroll, as I've already said, the percentage zero. And then on transfer to departmental agencies, primarily AMSCO, to which we make a transfer payment every financial year. We have now entered into a service level agreement with AMSCO to indicate what the exact deliverables and expectations are from ourselves. For 09-10, 75 million. 10-11, 94 million. 11-12, 89 million. And then adjustments for foreign exchange. This we are highlighting because we use foreign exchange payments towards the strategic defense packages that we have received and which are going to the tail end in the next few years, but for which we'll continue to pay. For 2009 medium-term expenditure framework, for 9-10 is 290 million, and then 10-11, 99, and then 0 in 2011-12. So, Chair, the total then, in rounded figures, just to reconfirm what we indicated in the MTEF allocation, 740 million for this 09-10 financial year, 644 for 2010-11, 595 for 11-12. Now, what are our revenue estimates? In fact, before getting into the revenue estimates, just to indicate to you what is the impact, and of course, we have indicated earlier, that is our contribution, that 1.9 billion, over this medium-term expenditure framework period. And unavoidably, the reduced allocations have a negative impact on the department and performance targets. So we are in the process of revising such a performance target as we had originally planned before the cut. Now, our revenue estimates are as follows. In terms of economic classification, actual and collected as well as medium-term receipts estimate in rand thousand, and you see again we put in the immediate past financial year 08-09, and then the current one 09-10, and the next 2010-11, and then 11-12. Now on tax receipts, nothing to declare. On sales of goods and services, other than capital assets, for 09-10, 357 million, and 2010-11, 367 million, 11-12, 378 million. Insofar as transfers received is concerned, and you see a significant decline if you compare with the previous financial year of 290 million, now 152 million for 09-10, and for 2010-11, still 152 million. A slight increase, and then 11-12, a slight increase as well, 152.9. On fines, penalties, and forfeits, there is an increase for 9-10, 1.7, and then 10-11, 1.769, some increase there, and then 1.822 for 11-12. And then on interest, dividends, and rent on land, there is a reduction in terms of our receipt estimate, and that is 1.174 for 09-10, 1.2 for 10-11, and 1.246, a slight increase for 11-12. On sales of capital assets, you see that significant drop in the comparison between the last financial year, where it was 122.711, now at 38.486, and then increasing slightly in the 2010-11 to 39.641, and then 40.8880 in 2011-12. and financial transaction in assets and liabilities, there is an increase there from the last financial year. The current expected is 31.1, and then the next 2010-11, 32, and 33 in the 2011-12. So, Chairperson, honorable members, the total departmental receipts, therefore, in overall terms, has declined. In terms of our projection for this financial year, 582, 2010-11, 595, and then 2011-12, 608. So, nowhere in comparison with the previous financial year. So, the way forward for 2010-11, we had engagements with the Justice, Crime, Prevention and Security Cluster Budget Review Team on the 1st of June, as coordinated and convened by the National Treasurer. And of course, within that context, we needed to table before the Budget Review Team, which is a step towards the Medium-Term Expenditure Committee, as well as the budget adjustment. The policy options that we indicated without stating the figures as yet are as follows. Firstly, and as a top priority, the establishment of a military veterans management organizational entity as part of the Ministry of Defense and Military Veterans, also as part of the Department of Defense and Military Veterans. Secondly, occupational specific dispensation and allowances. This is something which impacts across government. And as part of government, we are also affected by that. And then remuneration improvement for salary levels 1 as an entry point to 12 as deputy director. And then furthermore, a general rejuvenation of the defense force, but then with a primary focus on the South African Army's main mission equipment. And this is what is going to form the gist of the landward rejuvenation strategy. And then increase in the operational funding for the strategic defense packages. This will primarily be towards the integration of the acquired equipment as part of the strategic defense packages. And then furthermore, continuation training for the reserve forces. You have seen earlier on indicated this financial year there is no allocation, and then it's allocated from next year onwards. And then the completion of the waterproof, airport-based waterproof runway, we expect this should be complete within the MTF period or even before the MTF period ends. And then finally, the enhancement of information technology through the Defense Enterprise Information System Master Plan. Chair, honorable members, these are the policy options that we presented, and they will form part of the MTEC deliberation. At that point, we will be having exact figures about what are the amounts, and then see in consultation with National Treasury which would be funded and by how much. But they are in that particular order of priority. Now, moving on, what has been our response to the state of the National Treasury? On speeding up economic growth, transforming the economy, and creating decent work for sustainable development, the Department of Defense and Military Veterans' response to that has been through the further enhancement, not introduction, but further enhancement of the military skills development system that is already underway. And we are looking at increasing that and are in discussion with other Department of State to see how we can further enhance the military skills development system program, primarily targeting the youth and also as part of the rejuvenation of the defense force. Secondly, on developing and implementing a comprehensive rural development strategy linked to land and agrarian reform as well as food security, we continue with land restitution program that we are currently involved in, and have, in fact, over the recent years, as part of the restitution program, given away a lot of land and facilities that were in use by the Department of Defense, primarily the South African National Defense Force. We can give the detail of which right throughout the country. And then, furthermore, still as our response, with a particular reference to strengthening the skills and human resource base, within that, we have a two-pronged strategy, which is both remunerative and non-remunerative. And we are reviewing that from time to time. And then, on improving the health profile of all South Africans, we have provided for this within the Military Health Support Program, which is a program that is driven by the Surgeon General. And then furthermore, still as part of that, to ensure that the information on the health profile of our members is provided for that if required can be provided in a separate closed presentation to the committee. And then on intensification of the fight against crime and corruption, we are in full support of the South African Police Service or South African Police in internal crime prevention. Also, in interventions internally, as well as in borderline control. In fact, within this context, we still continue to support the South African Police in some of the borderline control operations that are underway. And are reviewing, as part of overall national government, the earlier directive that by 2009, the Defence Force must be out of that role. But we still continue with that as part of our support to intensify the fight against crime and corruption. But also, on corruption, we are implementing and even intensifying anti-fraud as well as anti-criminality strategies. We have structures in place primarily within the Inspector General's office, a specific directorate anti-fraud, as well as the Military Police Agency as an instrument to ensure that we execute that. As part of our response, furthermore, on the matter of pursuing African advancement and enhanced international cooperation, we do this as defense and military veterans through defense diplomacy, as reflected through our military attaché or defense attaché footprint, that is the deployment of our defense attachés throughout the world. But the second element, the South African National Defense Force deployment as part of the support operation, but also as part of the capacity building to other armed forces. And then the last element, through the operationalization and servicing of numerous defense cooperation agreements that we have primarily within SADC and beyond SADC on the continent and also abroad. So on ensuring sustainable resource management and use, two elements. Firstly, we employ a multi-pronged strategy to help realize the qualification-free audit, whose initial phase is already being implemented through what we call Operation Train Audit. And it was interesting to hear the Premier of the Free State yesterday talking about Operation Chain Audit. We have had Operation Chain Audit for the last year and a half in the Department of Defense, and we can expand on that. On strengthening of internal controls, that is a process that is underway in terms of ensuring further accountability and then ensuring also the necessary IT systems to improve internal controls, as well as ensuring strengthening of commands within the National Defense Force and stronger management as well. On building a developmental state, we pursue a couple of objectives as part of our embracing the developmental state, to build a developmental state. Firstly, enhancing and maintaining comprehensive defense capabilities. Secondly, promoting peace, security, and stability in the region and on the continent. And then, last, support to the people. And these are an integral part of our defense strategy as well as our military strategy. So on the last two elements related to how are we responding to the state of the nation address, on improving the public services, as part of our service delivery improvement plan, we have selected, and we said that much earlier on at the beginning, the military skills development system, primarily targeting the youth, and then the balance scorecard as programs that we will continue to track over time. And of course, in addition to the interventions that we have embarked upon as part of our strategy of support to the people of South Africa. And then furthermore, executing successful missions, and that is part of our improving public services, executing successful missions, whether internally to South Africa or externally. And then lastly, strengthening democratic institutions. This we do concretely within the SADC, African Union, as well as the United Nations structure. Participation also by way of deployment of our members within those structures, not so much for principal operations, but as part of the bureaucracy of the SADC, we do have members that were placed within that. Also as part of the African Union, we do have our members that are deployed in there. And then as part of the UN structure, we do have our members within those bureaucracies to ensure that we are strengthening those institutions. And also as part of South Africa's commitment to meet our quota within this multilateral structure. Chair, on the last parliament, and now yourself, have asked that we reflect on the recommendations that were made by the Portfolio Committee on Defense, and of course aimed at improving the content and the focus of the strategic business plan. We have factored these in, and we are ready to present those in a separate presentation as indicated earlier. In conclusion, Chair, on this one, before I move to the next one, if you so permit, we'd like to say that we believe we have made some remarkable improvements in the quality of our plans as well as our performance information. And then also, we have made sure that the content of our strategic business plan complies with the Treasury Regulations 5.2 insofar as setting and timelines and the content thereof. And then, of course, there have been changes that are a consequence of how we position ourselves, and we have factored them into the strategic business plan, especially the promulgation that came after the strategic business plan had been compiled. And then we continue then to look at the strategic issues that pose a threat for us to fully realize our output. And then, of course, we are continuing to meet our other commitments. I'd like to pause here for your further guidance in terms of the second part or the other element of the appearance before you, which is basically, and we are ready for that, how have we dealt with the matters that were raised by the said parliament insofar as that year's strategic business plan is concerned, or we are ready to take questions on this particular part. Thank you.
Now, thank you at this particular moment. You see, because of time, that one also to make sure that the body can generally reflect on the work that you've been doing. So, we know you're not disappearing from Parliament. You are coming back. Let's give the auditor general. I know you have distributed the document here. So, I wanted to take our members to that particular document. Can I also welcome Mr. Mkongo? Good morning, sir. I'll always make sure that you receive all the documentation so that you're always on time there. I also welcome you, Mr. Mwesi. Good morning, sir. Thanks for coming around. And also you, Mr. Connor. Well, now at the moment where we just want to give the auditor general to reflect on the state of things. I hope everybody has got the document from the auditor general.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. May I start by introducing the members of my team. My name is Musa Tongwa. I am the business executive from the Auditor General. I have on my left Chen Ilof, who is the senior manager on the audit of the Department of Defense. And behind me on my left also I have the other senior manager, Yan Tienka, who is also the senior manager on the Department of Defense. And behind me, I have Zanele,
who's our representative from our Cape Town Parliament office. We have submitted the briefing document to the members, and they have pointed out that this is meant for the members, and based on the audit findings that we have made over the past 3 years, 05, 06, 07, 08. 08, 09 audits we are currently still busy with, and we do not have findings at the moment that we can report on. The matters that were reported on in our audit report in the past 3 years, and in the last year, 7 qualifications, that is in the year 07, 08. In the previous year, I think there were about 13 qualifications. So there has been an improvement. The number of qualifications have come down by about half. The main areas where those qualifications were, the first one was the area of tangible and intangible assets, where there were a number of challenges. Our findings were basically due to inadequacy of the disclosures in the asset register and also in the financials, inadequate disclosures of the movement of assets, and also challenges in the internal controls that resulted in those findings. The other area where we qualified our audit.
Can I just get your attention, sir? If you could just say to my members at which page are you talking from? Are you on which page are you now?
Or that's page 4.
Yeah. So that we can all go directly to that page. We are on page 4 in the document itself that comes from the audit agenda. Okay, fine.
Mr. Chair, I was just trying to give a brief summary of the whole document. And we can go through the document page by page if the members prefer us to do so.
We are doing very well now.
Okay.
We are doing very well. Very progressive.
All right. Okay. The second area was the area on employee benefits. That basically refers to the leave provision, where we qualified our audit report because of lack of sufficient acceptable evidence that supported the figures that appeared on the financials. The figure was about 865 million. That was disclosed in the financials. The third area of qualification was on contingent liabilities, which mainly refers to the disclosures that were required in terms of the National Environment Management Act and also housing guarantees, which for which we were not provided with sufficient evidence for us to report on, and therefore that resulted in a qualification. The other one related to related party disclosures, which are required in terms of the guidelines of the National Treasury, and which were not disclosed completely as was required. So we had the issue on completeness of the disclosures on the related party transactions. The other application was on leave commitments, finances, commitments were not included in the disclosures as was required by the National Treasury Guidelines. And the other area related to the departmental revenue, which was disclosed, the total figure was about 551 million on the financials. We are also not satisfied as to the completeness of those disclosures. There were insufficient evidence to support our to support the disclosures on the financials. That was on the main account of the DOD. On the special defense account, which we also audit separately as a separate entity,
There were no qualifications. There were just some findings which resulted in the emphasis of Mehta and other matters. We also reported on governance, and the areas that we looked at included audit committees for which we did not make any negative findings. On the internal audit, we did not make any negative findings. On the senior management availability during the audit, we did not also make any findings. On the audit of performance information, we also did not make any findings. We, of course, do not issue an audit opinion at this stage on the audit of performance information in line with our phase-in approach, but we will start issuing a separate audit opinion on the performance information for the year ended 2010, 31st March 2010, which is next year. But so far, we did look at the information that was submitted to us and did not make any negative findings. We also, on our document, reported on the SCOPA resolution. The DOD did not appear on the SCOPA this year as yet for the 2007-08 year, but they did appear in the previous year for findings relating to the previous year. We are currently also busy with the audit for the year ended 09, which is 08-09, and we have been given evidence or some information relating to similar findings that were made in the previous year, the information which was still in the auditing, so we cannot report on that at the moment. We are also aware that the Department of Defense has designed some action plans to deal with the qualifications that we made in the previous year, and we are currently busy with paying attention and ratifying those negative findings that were made in the past. We are only going to be able to report on this when we finish with the current bodies that we are dealing with at the moment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No additions. Finish in your team.
Yes, that's basically the summary of what we've got in the session. But if you want to say more on any point, we can do so.
So you say there's a lot of improvements on their side.
Yes, there are improvements that we've seen so far, but we are still busy with the information that is submitted to us for the year, and we'll only be able to report on that when we finish the audit.
And the National Treasury. I know my letter is pretty strong for you to provide a job, Minister. I know you always forward looking and progressive in providing information. Thank you.
Thank you, Chester. I have not prepared a presentation because I was informed beforehand that I must say something. But I think I just want to start off by, for the sake of the new members, specifically in relation to the budget growth of defense. If we look at the slide that the department presented, the growth looks very small. One thing that we must bear in mind is that those amounts include the payment of the Special Defense Procurement Program. So in the beginning it was quite huge, but it's been phased out because the program is nearing its end. Now, according to my projections, if the growth, the department budget grew from 17 billion in 2005-06 to 33 billion in 11-12. So it almost doubled over 6 years. So it's quite an enormous growth. And if we take into account currently our socio-economic needs, there's hardly any scope to increase the budget of the Department of Defense. The department likes to mention the fact that they only get 1.3% of GDP, but 1.3% of an ever-growing GDP. That's why the average growth over the 6 years of this department was in the region of 11%, which is quite huge. I think if you look also, I just want to refer to the State of the Nation address of the President. We made it quite clear, no wastage, no rollover of funds. Everything must be spent wisely and fruitfully. We must cut our cloth according to our size. Also, indicative figures from our macroeconomist is that for this year, there might very well be a negative growth in deficit, which means that we will have to cut the department even further before we start borrowing money to pay wages, borrow money to pay debt, those type of issues. The only way that we can sort of save the economic situation then is to cut government expenditure. So there's a few issues on that. And then I'll say something on the military veteran. In April of this year, we actually made a proposal on the clusters and to the National Planning Commission on the restructuring of government departments that we should have a deputy ministry for military veterans. Because of all the concerns that continue to be raised regarding the neglect of the military veterans. Unfortunately, they only changed the name of the department to include military veterans. Now, when we made this proposal, we never envisaged that it's going to have a huge financial implication for the department. Because at the moment, if you look at the Military Veterans Affairs Act of 1999, it states there that an Office for Military Veterans Affairs is established in the Department of Defense to look at a range of issues. And then also the Secretary for Defense is the accounting officer of this office. So according to us, it could very well just be an increase in the office that's already existing. I don't know how well that office is functioning, but in terms of the act, it should have been there. Chairperson, further, just to further indicate capital expenditure of the Department of Defense. Over the MTF period, they have 21 billion rand for capital. So this is now for equipment, procurement and operating of new equipment, which is quite massive. And I think what I've read in the newspaper is that South Africa is the biggest importer of military hardware in Africa. And I think, but also based on this huge allocation that they have in the system already, that in the for the future couple of years, the department should not expect any increases in the budget allocation, unless for specific priorities and if there's money available to be allocated. Thank you.
So you, from the treasury side, you have not really put money aside for the military veterans. So what is your current thinking?
Chairperson, I believe that the Department of Defense has consulted with our section of deals with the establishment of public entities. I don't know what the outcome of that discussion was at this stage. But as far as the Treasury is concerned, and I don't want to say this is now cut and dry, but the Department will have to fund this military veteran issue within their budget. That's our point of view.
No, I'll give it over to members. The time is about 10:40. But the governor to say hello to the other members of the defense committee there in the gallery. How are you? Ah, we are all fine. On this side, these are members of parliament. On this side are the members from the defense force. Members of parliament are going to ask questions from the members of the defense force. They've done a presentation about their budget today. Are you going to be here the whole day? Okay. So you just sit quietly and see how members are asking questions. You're welcome, huh? Okay, bye. Dr. Mulange.
Thank you, Commissioner. Just follow up on the last question you asked the treasurer. Do you understand me to say that in terms of the 1999 Act establishing the military veterans, nothing has been done? And are you saying that no funds have been provided for that unit? And importantly, what did you understand by military veterans? What is your understanding of that? Do you understand that to include veterans who participated in the struggle for the liberation of South Africa? Or do you consider military veterans as those who took part in the First and Second World War, including the Korean tensions? That question to me is very important, especially the last one. Thank you.
Any member got a question to the treasurer? Can I allow you to answer?
Well, thanks, Honorable Chair. It's just a follow-up question to Honorable Mlangen. I just want to know, where does the park stop? Because here, if the Treasury seems to say we are not responsible for the military veteran allocation or budget, I mean, who is finally going to be responsible? Because I know for a fact that forms are out there, even to accommodate those who were younger than 85 years on the 1st of December 1996, and they are hopeful that they will be in something because they participated in the liberation struggle. I just want to know who is finally responsible for the allocation of the budget of the military veterans. Thank you.
I'll allow you to write down some from your side, because I've got two other members who want to also raise questions. Can I just leave that member there? What is that? I'll come to you now.
Thank you, Chair. Just a follow-up to two honorable members. I want to hear it very clear, sir. Are we suggesting that there's nothing whatsoever from Treasury for the military veterans? And what I also want to check from the Defense Department, what programs currently are there for the military veterans?
Chair, I think it's important that we get the facts on the table. And what perplexes me, and I'm not sure that the gentleman from the Treasury will be able to give us clarity on this, but perhaps the Secretary of Defense will. If the Secretary of Defense claimed that there was no allocation for military veterans, then that position seems to be supported by the gentleman from the Treasury. But the Department of Defense's own strategic business plan makes provision, and I quote, for the establishment of the Military Veterans Agency to be fully functional by the 31st of March 2011. And then in the financial year 2009-10, in terms of its target, sets itself a target that this agency must be 80% established. Now, presumably, that has been budgeted for. So, in fact, there must be provision for military veterans in the Department of Defense's budget.
I'll allow the Treasury to answer first, and then we are coming to the defense. The Secretary is going to be here for quite some time. You can prepare on that particular question. You want to say something, sir?
Thank you, Chairperson. The question regarding the allocation for military veterans is, the National Treasury makes an allocation to the department, and the department must use that money to fund what is ever expected from them in terms of the legislation. So we don't make allocations for money to veterans, but it is the responsibility of the department to allocate the resources to what is legally required from them to fulfill. As far as the budget, we don't know what the implication of this Ability Veterans Affairs, the establishment of this agency is going to be. We haven't seen any documentation, we don't know the extent of it. So at this stage, I cannot say there's no budget for it, but we haven't seen the financial implications of it. What I'm saying is not a new thing that's within the department. It was already required from in terms of legislation. More than that, I cannot say on the budget. There is some money set aside for the restructuring of departments, the establishment of new departments. So I will have to go back and find out whether there's going to be money for military veterans. Chairperson, I cannot comment more than that. The military veterans, the definition, in terms of the legislation, this includes MK, all the previous forces that's been incorporated in the National Defence Force, as well as, obviously, the Union Defence Force of the Great Wars in 1914 and 1918. So it includes all those, both the veterans and force and those forces. Thank you.
Honorable members, at this moment, we are going to leave the treasury so that we can come back and interrogate the department itself that has made the commitment. We were just really asking the National Treasury to give us an overview of how they've been progressing into dealing with the work that has been presented on the fourth parliament. So you do have a sense now. So let's jump into now, and we should be back at about 11 o'clock. Then after tea, set up and have to prepare to answer most of these questions. Thank you. But thanks for Treasury, and thanks for Auditor General, for being able to give us the insights of how things are going. Thank you.
I'm also treasure you have opened up a can of worms and get people to direct what they are raising. But the element of concern will always be how the preparedness of the department for the first parliament and the new changes that have been announced by the president. From where I'm seated, I understand the fact that the department has not gone into a rigorous debate about the military veterans. But what I appreciate is that it's on the agenda now. So whatever you are saying, whatever body is saying here today, we take note of the progress. But members have read the minister's input in the strategic document, which is very substantial about how she wants to approach the whole issue. And I think from there, it does present the challenge to all of us, like how do we move forward around this particular area. Is very much important, but you know fundamentally how much money is going to be spent on military veterans. That question is going to come back quite a lot throughout this period. Because there has to be some thorough thinking that what do we mean by military veterans, as you could see. The questions that are starting to be posed by members. But I don't want to take your time, members. I want to give it in your paper would have that you start. We have got an opportunity to allow the Auditor General to go for some more of information. Also, National Treasurer wants more to do with information. The people that they are left with is ready to deal with the sector of itself. At least, I'm capable of him to give the most answers about what is actually going on in this department. Okay, I'll allow him. You were the first one, and I'll give you Ayanda.
So my first question is in fact not directed at the Secretary of Defense and perhaps you could assist us. Last week I was given to understand that each service chief, or that the chief of the South African National Defense Force and each service chief would be here today to give their perspective on how the budget presumably affects their state of readiness. And they are not here. Could you perhaps shed some light on that, Chair?
So what we... The third step is the accounting of people. He becomes the first one to see to answer that question, to answer questions. And then we systematize from there on. So what he has spoken about the landlord. So we need to invite the chief of the landlord to come in and give an explanation about what that goes on. But the overall support for the which is the sector. So in the system, you allow him to come. But what I have asked from the department to him, to the minister, that they must be invited to come so that they can interact with members from the first day that we interact here. Now, since that message has not gone through, they have done more representatives from the different divisions. So I've just consulted with the sector to say that my message is what the portfolio committee was expecting is to see each head of the division being present. So he is promising me that on the day of the, on the 26th, we got all of them will be present. But beyond that one, we in the program that we are going to outline, we are going to really get each one of them to have a say. Because even in the first department, that one gets answered by the chief of defense. We can't answer it. When we give it land one, the chief of himself has to come here and we understand from him what he's doing. So that's how we are going to operate.
Can I just follow up?
Okay.
The chair would suspect, will we be able to achieve that before the budget vote next Friday? I mean, for example, I would like to know whether it would be possible, for example, for the South African Navy to deploy 2 submarines or 3 submarines fully manned or fully stocked. Now, presumably only the service chief or the chief of the South African National Defence Force or the service chief that could answer that question. Now, will we be able to get responses to that kind of question before the budget vote next Friday?
As I say that they are representatives, would you be able to answer some of the questions? Yeah, they say they have got the capability as the defense itself.
to answer all questions. That's what they are committing. You can see from the knowledge. They've got human resource also from the defense, the chief of defense. You see, there's quite a number, there's a range of them from the various heads. As I'm saying, they are more junior. I wanted the heads of their own department, but they are not here now. But definitely, so that interaction is not going to end. But thank you for asking that question. You know, you are in a director's role here. There's any other class that you want around this particular department. Members must never feel free or be afraid to ask those type of questions. Well, that adds to the program of Parliament so that I know what members are looking for and which direction they would want the committee to go. And then I will prepare jointly with the department to get those type of people to come and represent them and answer some of the questions. But that's what it is. The department has asked some of this. Do you want to go to your second question now? So you want Ayanda? No. Don't get intimidated by women here. Ayanda, you can take it.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Thank you, Shakasu. I had a few questions lined up here, and there are quite a lot. The first one relates to transformation. And the Honorable Member has actually touched on what I would have wanted to raise as well. That transformation is not necessarily about affirmative action only, but neither is it about gender only. It is really about the readiness, the combat readiness of all services. Now you have these numbers of, for instance, arms that have been recently acquired part of the arms field. Does the Defence Force have the required skills and personnel, but also the disposition to man what it is that has been acquired over time? Would look at the pilots, for instance, and the engineers?
Wonderful. Good morning, citizenship of South Africa. How are you? Fine. This is a defense committee. We are in a session where we have done their presentation. Now, honorable members of parliament that have asked some questions in relation to the vote of the defense committee, sir. Okay. Thanks. You can go ahead.
So my question really on transformation evolves around the capabilities, the human resource capability of all services under the Defence Force, and whether they'd be able to meet the requirements of their mandate. It has pilots and engineers, and the other question that has been mooted but not formally raised was about the fact that we've got submarines. Do we really have the right kind of skills and the personnel, but also do we have the wherewithal to perform some of the functions that would be required. And still on transformation, I'm happy that the Treasurer has that check on initial presentation, because it was quite clear that they do not have money, they're not going to be funding the establishment of the military veteran department, but I'm happy that she has that check that is going to be looking at in a different way. Because it's one of the most sensitive areas that you cannot find in all countries that have been through a war. You will find that most countries really have special programs to look after their war veterans. And again, it brings me to the issue of whether or not people still remember that South Africa was at war, we come from a war. And as such, the non-statutory forces that were incorporated into the old SADF, so to speak, become war veterans in a sense, and there's so many packages and benefits that accrue to war veterans. And I think that's the light in which we need to tackle this issue. It's going to be a hugely expensive exercise, but we need to be prudent in the way that we deal with it. I know for a fact that MKMVA and ABLA have been meeting over time, and hence the smooth establishment of your FANDA. And so many issues have come out of those discussions, which really would need budgeting for. Including budgeting for the beneficiaries as well. So I think we need to be very prudent and ultra-sensitive in the way that we deal with the establishment of the military veterans department. and the SACDEF also needs to consult with SANDA, which is a legally established entity. I know that in SANDA there has been different talks of whether or not this should be an agency or whatever, but fact of the matter is that now things have changed. It is now a ministry that is responsible for military veterans and defense. Now, there have been different ideas mooted as to how it is that this whole thing needs to pan out, as to whether or not you need to have a fully fledged department of military veterans and a separate department of defense, meaning that you would then have two accounting officers under that ministry. So those are the issues that we really need to be very sensitive and prudent in our approach as we deal with them. But I can tell you that SANDA would want now, through the discussions that have been raised, that has been held, that SANDA would be pushing for a department to be established that specifically deals with military veterans. And as you may well understand, part of that would also assist in some of the sustainable issues that have been raised by the President in his State of the Nation address. Because what we have done here in dealing with some of the issues on the State of the Nation address, for instance, ensuring sustainable resource management and use, that I would not have wanted the Department of Defense to confine itself only to what it is that it needs to do in terms of internal control, but your role in the development of things as a defense force. And a sustainable resource management, what would you do? You have got a huge contingent of reserves. You have got a huge contingent of soldiers or military personnel that is not fully occupied on a day-to-day basis. You also have the military veterans that will be falling under the ministry. What do you do with those resources, and how do those resources contribute towards the betterment of our people? Because among those people, you will have people that are skilled in engineering. You will have people that are skilled in all sorts of the different sectors of the economy where there are shortages of skills. You would have people that would contribute towards setting up summer camps and winter camps so that school children can be prepared for history, they could be prepared for sciences, they could be prepared for mathematics. So those, for me, that's the kind of work that we need to be dealing with, rather than only confining ourselves with what is internal to us insofar as our management responsibilities are concerned. So you have a huge skill set that is really untapped, which then also brings me to the establishment of a database of military veterans. And the Treasury, again, needs to be very sensitive to that, because if you're going to be bringing in a group of people, you need to be able to know who it is that you're dealing with. The skill space that presents to the government, what are you going to do with all of these people? Are they going to be sitting idle and sit just on your books and receive all the benefits that that accrue to them? Or are they going to be people that are going to be useful to the growth of our economy, social and the social dispensation of our country? What are we going to see there? The support for that, I think we need to clearly unpack this. Because here you would have a contingent of military people subordinated to civilians. Those are some of the nuances that we would seriously consider, have to consider in trying to deal with our contribution towards crime prevention as a defense force. Now, the contribution on crime prevention does not necessarily mean that you need to be involved in crime prevention operations together with the police. It brings me back to the issue of the skill set that exists within the SANT, within the SANTS, but also that would be brought in by the military veterans. What do you do to create a nation of people that are law-abiding? What would your role be as a defense force? What would your role be insofar as the rehabilitation programs of correctional services are to reduce the amount of repeat offenders in the system? So we could look at so many other issues without necessarily getting involved in crime combating or crime prevention operations of the police. Now, there has been talk of the SANDF assisting in the in the transit of cash. Again, they will need to be very careful on how we approach the issue, because if citizens experience the fear of crime, what do you say to them if you're going to be involved as a defense force in assisting private companies to safeguard their assets? Because if I want to be extremely silly, I could say, if you can assist Springbok and ask them to transport their money, why don't you assist me to keep people at my home and guard my house instead? So we need to have a very fine balance in the way that we deal with our crime combating and crime prevention and participation as a defense force, so that we do not use public funds to support private companies when the general populace has a problem with either experiencing crime or just the fear of crime itself. And also on ensuring sustainable resources, the land and buildings that we have, the training facilities that we have, our social responsibility initiatives are some of the things that we need to be looking at, over and above what I raised around our involvement in the education system at a basic level. That probably would need to say this group of people need to adopt this group of children over the summer camp or the winter camp, and have classes like the Star and the University used to have in the past, so that we can then be able to raise the profile of students that are in sciences, for instance, which are much required in the SANPF. That would be a clear recruitment ground for the SANPF for future recruitment purposes. The NSF pension and the discrepancy on the pension scheme in general within the force, where you would find an MK soldier who joined MK in 1976 and an SADF soldier who joined the SADF in 1976 cashing out differently when they go on pension. It has huge financial implications. It has been a very unfair system because people left South Africa when they were from the ages of 13, some of them up to the ages of 25, and who do not participate in the pension scheme equitably as those that found themselves on the other side of the battlefield. So we really need to speed up the process to ensure that the generals that would retire at the same age with almost the same number of years of service get the same amount of money, and there isn't that discrepancy that we were experiencing in this sense. Having looked at the baseline allocation, one would want to understand why there's a bias on air defense rather than landward defense in what you're looking at, especially when you think of the problems that are experienced in the landward defense sector. One on personnel, but also on equipment. And I'm not sure whether the bias actually speaks to the issues that are at hand. Now, the special equipment, I'm not sure whether it is not budgeted for in the baseline allocation. Because then if it is budgeted for, some of the equipment is budgeted for there, why don't we look at reviewing the special defense account, which might take into account some of the issues that we've been raising about funding the military veterans portion of the ministry itself. Well, I'm sure there is a bit of fat that we could find from the Chinese to reallocate money for the different people to do that. And what we should also do probably is maybe look at the expenditure patterns of this account over here to determine whether or not there couldn't be any under expenditure, but also if we couldn't be looking at realizing savings from spending in this particular account, because then we could be able then to find a way of reallocating some of the money to fund the establishment of the military. management or department management.
Thanks, Chair. I understand that there is a directorate for military veterans. I'm interested in what services are being offered currently to the military veterans. That's one. Secondly, I think we've been talking, Chair, not just about the directorate, we've been talking about the department. What are the concrete plans in terms of the implementation that we have in the department? And this question must be asked. If I heard what Treasury was saying, Treasury was saying, no, we have not seen anything. Does this suggest that there are no concrete plans from the side of the department which have been submitted towards the implementation or towards concretizing the department? Lastly, this is more of a general question. How would you assess what I would call the successes and the failures of our international position where we've deployed our soldiers? Thank you.
May I do a comment? After you, okay.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. First, let me commend Department of Defense for not only giving us elaborate presentation, but for being very economic. As I went through this, it's back to back, and actually on one page, you can see that the information is condensed. Now, I think we must learn from them. We're going through recession, rather difficult, and all of us must be thrifty, including members of parliament. I think all of us are learning something that people who are trustworthy or who could be trusted with paper, surely they can be trusted with military hardware. I've got a few questions. First on transformation. How is the Defence Force coping with transformation? Because it's a matter of fact that South Africa, as a society, as a nation, has not transformed. And how is it, as far as gender and mirroring, being the mirror of a democratic reality, especially in skill-intensive areas like Air Force, with particular emphasis to aviation pilots and engineering? I know when you speak and you go racial, people think you are a racist, but that's not the case, because if you want to diagnose a sick society, you must get to the mother of the problem. So how many black pilots have we got? How many total number of pilots have we got in the Defense Force? And how many of them are black or Indian origin, etc.? How many are women, because that is part of gender transformation. Now, on page 16, there are some servicing, we were told that there are some challenges on servicing memoranda of understanding. Now, what are those challenges? On page 48, you spoke about non-profit institutions, collaboration with them. You put as an example Red Cross. I would like to know, besides Red Cross, what are other non-profit organizations or institutions that you collaborate with? The reason I'm asking this question It's because I'm also a member of the Lindy Fori Foundation, and we specialize, among other things, in helping ex-combatants, both on South African National Defense Force and Liberation Forces. And we've been looking for quite a while on Defense Force, National Defense Force dot, but we did not get a very promising response. So, well, I suppose that Honorable Chair even to the Committee of Parliament that I'm a member of that thing for the Foundation. Now, lastly, on page 55, you are thinking about collaboration between the Defence Force and South African Police Services, especially as far as national border patrols are concerned. Now, I think it's a common knowledge that South African borders are very porous, which was not a bad thing during liberation struggle. But now that liberation struggle is over, we are concerned that they continue to be porous. What are measures in place that the Defence Force has to counter, especially the influx of foreigners into the country? Thank you.
Chair, I have a raft of questions that I will try, unlike other honourable members, to ask them in digestible chunks through you, Chair. Let me start at the strategic level. Reading the draft business plan, the Minister, for example, in her opening statement, talks about a programme for the new administration. And then throughout the document, there are references to for example, on page 17 and other pages, defense strategy, there's a reference, in fact, to a white paper and a defense review on page 12 of the document. And I mean, my question to the Secretary is there any, it seems to me, and this is illustrated by the confusion about the role of the Defense Force in borderline security, where both documents, the strategic business plan and indeed the presentation, are contradictory. There's a talk on the one hand about phased withdrawal of the FAMGF, but then footnotes about that being reversed. And it seems to me that what there is a defense policy void. And my question really to the Secretary of Defense is whether the minister, or whether he knows whether the minister has any intention of producing a green paper on defense, so that we have some clarity on this government's defense policy, because the last white paper on defense, Chair, you will know, was published in 1996 and represents the defense policy of the government of national unity under former President Nelson Mandela. So that's one question. And I'd like some clarity on that.
You know, when you are quoting us, you say that we are going to have an expenditure on landmark people of the year. I mean, we have gone through some experiences on the strategic package. What preparation are you putting into place when it comes to telling about those levels? I mean, what is that? How transparent is going to be that process of the landmark? Because I don't think the country is ready to face another until now. And usually, when we sell or we buy up, that type of a development does take place. So I just want to know from the sector, what mechanisms do you have to be able to counter what we have gone through as a country up until now, where there is allegations? Are you having a better capacity now to prepare us and be able to bring it to the attention of the committee? When you give that package over to the landlord, this is what is going to happen. This is how we are going to invite people to come and sell to the department so that we don't go through the same exercise that we have gone through in the number of years of the ministry. I also want to echo what other members are saying. The private press, although the question is a sub-strategy, I mean, I joke, the ministry has played a lot of valuable voice, even in relation to the military veteran. Now, she's the political head of the organization. Now, I'm surprised that you come here and you tell us that you don't have money. And I don't know how to get the minister to commit herself so much so in the strategic document relating to this matter. Because what the minister says that of great importance is the need to comprehensively review the program of the DOD to take into consideration the administration of military veterans. Now, he doesn't put up time to it. So, from anyone who has that document, it's like the department is here to us. What Treasury is saying is that it's correct. There will be any other documentation prepared. But what Treasury says, there is a history in the department of relating to this particular matter of the military veteran. What is it that we should expect as Parliament? And how long are your time period? Because, you see, we want to avoid it. That's why I said you come to us last week. We don't want to deal with perception. Perception that we say that people don't want to recognize the fourth parliament or the fourth term of this government. And whatever the president has announced is getting ignored. You know, when we started that putting, that is very dangerous for us and the country, because it means that the parliamentarians don't listen to the president, and we allow the department to go ahead of something that we think is contrary to the spirit of what has happened in the first parliament. So your readiness, chief, is not going to be guided by you, but it's quite clear to us that the chief of defense and the president himself have spoken on this particular matter. Why is it that you seem not to be ready for this? You are not prepared for it at all. That to us is a serious concern. I mean, you can't come across in a particular way. So tell us and give us time frames that when are you going to be able to come back to us and give us something more concrete about what we are talking about. Members are going to raise different issues that are related to this, not the military veteran. But the expectation is that the department must be ready by now to give us an outline. So the Treasury doesn't say to us, we don't have something in writing that will be put forward to us to be able to contribute the case. You have promised us something that you are doing something that you are presenting to the department. So, it's a little bit of a surprise. And it's something that we're going to worry about. I think I want to go on with this thing on the servicing of the memorandum of understanding. You know, it's been a long problem in the department. What are the real challenges? And the one part question that I really want us to get more clarity is the absorption of the youth that you could recruit for MFCS. What happens to those young people? Do they disappear in the system or what? And on top of what one of the honorables was asking about the policy arrangement, we want to know about this update. When will it ever come to us? So that we could be able to prepare a parliament around that particular issue. I'll leave you here, we are going to come back. That is Marco.
Thank you very much, Chairman. In terms of the Department Strategic Business Plan, on page 16, a number of overarching issues that affect the operations of the Department of Defense will actually have been enumerated. One of those is the continuous loss of air skills to the private sector. So my question would be, what kind of skills are we talking about here that we are losing to the private sector? And secondly, what is the Department of Defense doing to make up for that skills loss? Or what is the department doing to stem that tide? Because obviously, if the defense is going to be, you know, training people, you know, skilling them, but at the end of the day, lose them, then it means the Department of Defense is not actually progressing, it's not developing. Instead, there is a serious internal hemorrhage that needs to be addressed. Thank you.
Thank you, Colonel Chairperson. I did say right at the beginning of this meeting that I'm a brand new person in this portfolio committee, in this committee. There are many things I don't know, and many things I do not understand. So I'm here really to learn. But what I do know is how a large number of people are suffering. People who, as I said earlier, were involved in the liberation struggle. I would like to know if the Secretary would confirm what the Treasury says, namely that the Establishment Act of 1999, establishing the Military Veterans Agency, does it include those people who were in our war for liberation? Are they included? Are they included in the same way the military veterans are covered? When I say military veterans, I mean those who were in the previous wars. First World War, Second World War, Korean intervention, and so on and so forth. Do they fall under that category? I need to understand this because I'm really concerned about the suffering of those people who do not have so-called force numbers. For example, they can't even go to the hospitals when they go to military hospitals. They say, what is your force number? They don't have those force numbers. That's my main concern. If you could answer some of those questions, I would appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you. I'll give to you and your to answer the number of questions that have been posed. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. The question, the first one I'll start with is those raised by Honorable Members also. With respect to transformation as more than affirmative action agenda, and more a focus on combat readiness of the defense force in terms of the required skills and personnel to operate the equipment and also to see to the integration of the strategic defense packages. And even beyond that, we certainly agree with that. The question asked at the last point is, will the functions be performed? And the answer to that is yes. The strategic defense packages that we have acquired, the personnel who have been trained, some are still undergoing training. We have and are able to operate. For instance, if we look at the naval environment, the frigates that we have been able to operate that, and we're continuing to operate that. Similarly with the submarine, and have in fact engaged in exercises with other countries over the last 2 years, from the time that the frigates and the submarines were delivered to us and were brought into service. We did engage in exercises, went also on missions tested by the country. In fact, even just a year or so ago, in fact, less than a year ago, when the United States ship came to the country, the aircraft carrier, they were engaged with in exercises with that particular vessel. We did the same with the Germans and so on, we can call. In the Air Force environment, similarly, there is the requisite skill at the moment. But having said all of that, I'd like to say that, and this links to the question that the honorable members have asked, with respect to the scarce skills, that yes, it is true, it remains a challenge that the scarce skills, and in particular, we can expand even more on that, pilots, navigators, engineers, even within the military health profession, continues to be a challenge in terms of retention and then ensuring that into the future we will have the requisite personnel to do that. We do have strategies in place and then we are beginning to roll them out insofar as retention of the scarce cases and some of the ways that we're using is to introduce a special dispensation for technical allowances for members in those particular categories so as to ensure their retention within the defense force. Also, a re-examination of some of the contracts because most, if not all, of the members who have scarce skills, even broader than the categories that we mentioned, are actually on a contract, whether a medium term or a long term contract. But what then happens is that the potential employer, primarily mostly in the private sector, then tend to buy out that contract and then simply then take the skill or take that member with the skill. We also have the challenge in that regard. Also, other countries poaching our highly qualified members. I can mention, without any fear of hesitation, armed forces in Australia, for instance, recruit from us. The UK, they also do that recruitment from us. So we continue to try and address that. But the Chief of Human Resources, Mr. Von Reden, can actually expand more on that. Before I can get into the next question. The skills.
Well, I think the issue is, as a government department, we are also obliged to follow the development in the Department of Public Service Administration when it comes to the development of occupational dispensation, special dispensation for members. As it has been said, in terms of the technical qualifying people, we came up with an idea that it will quickly try to retain some of our technical qualifying people and engineers. And we process our recommendation to both the Department of Public Service Administration and the National Treasury. But unfortunately, it seemed at the time we were a little bit ahead of the other government departments, so we had to wait. And we lost quite a number of people during this past financial year. So these are the challenges we're facing. It's the same when it comes to governors. It's because we must also wait for the Department of Health, because they are the leading department. It's the same when it comes to the legal people within the department. We must also wait for the Department of Justice, because they are the leading department when it comes to legal qualified people. So this is a challenge which covers all government departments. And the challenge is, although you might be looking at the monetary side of retaining people, the question of service conditions, what else can you do? So we're looking at those areas. So I will leave it at that in terms of the staff skills, but we are challenged because we are not able to retain them and we're not able to recruit them. So this is the issue at hand. Whether it's submariners, they also pilots, they also leave. And I think the Australian Air Force is doing very well in terms of recruiting from us. Thank you, Chair.
If I may continue. Okay. Chair, the second question, of course, that was raised also by Honourable Member Dodo with respect to the Ministry of Defence entity and the allocation of funds to the entity and looking at prudence and ultra sensitivity going forward with respect to veterans. We are in the process to examine how the entity will pan out subsequent to the pronouncement by the President. The Minister has directed the establishment of a task team. So that's what we did in the presentation that we're going to make immediately after the document is being taken. has directed the establishment of a task team which will comprise primarily the Ministry of Veterans Organizations themselves, as represented by their federation, SANVA, South African National Military Veterans Association, representatives from the Department of Defense, springing on the fact that we have already a small entity, not a department, but a small entity, just the directory of Ministry of Veterans Affairs. We'll also then have that representation of that, the Department of Public Service and Administration, to also that within the context of that department as being responsible for the whole government architecture of the rearrangement of government as pronounced by the President when appointing the new cabinet. And then also to have the Reserve Force Council as part of that entity and so on. We had expected, and I think by the end of this week, the Minister will actually, if that has not been done yet, but we'll take after this, to provide that promulgated membership of members of the task team to serve, which basically gives also the terms of reference of such a task team. Part of the things that they will have to do, not exclusively, will be to look at what is their structure, shape, and size, in terms of one of the issues that the Honourable Member has raised. Is it a standalone entity? Is it an entity that reports to one accounting officer within the Department of Defense and Military Veterans? Of course, with the political responsibility still lying with the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans. We'll also have to look at the organizational structure of such an entity. And also look at coordinating the efforts or whatever programs or activities that are being carried out by different departments across government, whether national, provincial government, as well as local government authorities, to look at that. In fact, before the promulgation of the Minister of Defense and Minister of Veterans, as well as the department, there had already been moved to look at how can the department assist to capacitate the South African National Military Veterans Association, assist in terms of the provision of the offices, and then to then look at the issue of the budget for that. But now this is a bigger animal we're not talking about, so we'll have to look at that in that project context. And then of course the task team will also have the right to co-opt anybody or organization that it feels and they have the requisite skills or expertise to bring on board towards the establishment of this entity. In terms of timelines, I would not want to commit the task team at this stage, but that is one of the first priorities the task team would have to do, to work out what is their timetable and what are their deliverables, and present their first report to the minister and to yourself. In the shortest possible time, but well before the end of the calendar year or even the financial year. But also to ensure that when we go on the next round of the budget adjustment, we don't have plans yet on the month, but maybe October, September, October, that we at that point already have a figure that we can talk to. Because we did, as we indicated, during the Justice, Crime Prevention and Security Budget Review Team presentation, highlights the matter of the establishment of this entity as a top priority and as a first policy option that the National Treasury will have to look at. Of course, even at that point, that was on the 1st of June, we did not have a figure to talk of, and at the stage we don't, but that's something that must come out by the task team.
I just wanted to check with members, are you clear about the process outlined here? About how this office of the military veterans is being worked out? Are you more clear now? Does it make sense and does it give you direction? So I
wanted to check. No. If I hear the department talking, only at the level of still trying to put together a task team. Am I right? Talking about putting together a task team, which is going to look into the office. Now, what I wanted to check, how do you envisage that process to, how long is
is an important development, and we don't want to keep it for a very long time. I mean, OTAP seems to have formed, and they then tend to have a life of their own, and nothing then happens in relation to their mandate. So I want you to be more clear, because you have said this in the past. And you see also, you are saying that it doesn't have budget capacity. Now, and you have not accommodated for it. I'm just trying to get more. Yeah, I mean, the military better is more than the task team. The task team, I don't know. No, I've not seen them as a point of reference. What is it that you are talking about? What is being expected of the task team to do? Because I saw that the president has pronounced it. What is the difference between what the president has pronounced and what you are putting together? And what the ministry is saying in the document itself? What is the difference? This body doesn't say it's in the strategic document that he's talking to a task team. He doesn't need that. I'm only hearing from you now. But I'm saying that what does the key presentations mean for Parliament itself? Well, see, I have to prepare a committee to attend this particular matter. Now, they need to know, as I tell the committee, that what is it that they expected? Is it going to be a task team that is either going to run outside Parliament, that we have to forget about the matter itself? Or what is it that they are talking about? It can be more explicit, sir. But I don't want these members to have an expectation or to talk to, or they've got constituencies that they must report back to. I want them to have more clarity that what is it that they're talking about. Because as I'm saying, the minister's document talks very substantial, but the task team doesn't tell us how is it getting constituted or precisely constituted, how long is it going to live, and how, I mean, what is it going to do with its own life, and how does it relate to Parliament? But Parliament has to know exactly what, how do we relate to the particular institution and entity. And then what does it mean to what the president has pronounced, to be exact? Yes.
Sir, I'll start with what the president has pronounced. What the president has pronounced is a directive, which we are in the process of now implementing. Now, to implement, we need to take into account all processes, including the legislative framework, financial implications, what organizational structure or entity do you do. A little bit, or some of that, we had already started to do. That's why you then saw in September 2008, the launch of the Military Veterans Association, the National, South African National Military Veterans Association. Some work is not great. Some work has been done, but with a directive to now establish an entity of military veterans, that is tenfold or even hundredfold in terms of what we then need to do to create such an entity. And as the honorable member, Joseph Georgia, has said, with his own head, does that head become the head of a department within the ministry itself, almost like you have with other ministries with two or three heads, like your ministry of, or Department of Public Service and Administration has got the DPSA as a department, but it also has the Public Service Commission as a department, it also has Palama as a department, all with their own heads at the level of a director general. So the task team must work itself out of work. So what they need to do is to work themselves to their own dissolution, which means that whatever they do has got to have an end state, at the end of which they close their report, they disband as a task team. It's a temporary or interim thing with specific tasks that they have to undertake, most of which will be focused on answering also some of the concerns that the members have, including, as indicated earlier, submitting reports to the minister, to Parliament also, because Parliament, in the same way as Parliament is taking
what the president has pronounced is before even the State of the Nation has but in constituting the fourth term of government. As part of accountability, the parliament also has to keep abreast with what is the progress of those developments in terms of establishing that. It is in that context that it is, at this stage, difficult to say 3 months they'll be finished, but we are working on as soon as possible. And the only line that one can draw is before the end of this year, noting that June is already gone. They have to start their work as soon as possible so that they can then put on the table some tangible results, get the entities to go. And as I've said, I hope that major elements of it will be complete by the time we go for the budget adjustment, so that we can then look pursuant to what we said is our policy priority, what allocation is there, what treasury says, look internally for how do we deal with that. But I cannot say that this is that to cost X amount and so on.
Just a short follow-up. No, we understand this need. But I think our concern is, whilst we have seen the strategic plan, which is very broad, of the department, but in relation to this specific matter, which is very sensitive, we think that we must have very specific business plan with clear time frames attached to that, so that we know that by this particular time, this will have been done. Because there are a lot of implementation things which we still have to be put in place before you have a fully functional department. This to us is like yesterday, because the reason why we are raising it, the chairperson is correct. Our constituencies out there, we have members, if I were to be secular, of MK, of APLA, who are really suffering. We want to see this fully operational. Some of us are owing our being here in Parliament to those people. So to us, it's the most sensitive thing that the members of the liberation movement, Abaki, the Chosa Bagut, Tila Ziaja, it's like a hunter going out with his dog, gets the game, a fat one, brings it home, you skin it, you cook it, you eat it, then you just throw bones to them. That's what it means to us when we're talking about the members of the liberation movement. Hence, we want to see this operational. In fact, if it were for our own, this must be one of the key priorities for this particular department. Thank you.
I will also mention that Honorable Mwangu last year was so seized with that problem that they started to occupy land in different parts of KwaZulu-Natal. Every time I saw him on TV, that's the first time I saw you sweating, my brother. I've never seen you sweating like that. And I know also some of the military veterans of different formations are also having expectations. So it is a problem that is going to haunt us. Yeah, that's why I'm saying that it's a very important development. We need to be able to have more concrete plans. If you have not enough sector, you don't have plans. That's the worrying part. I hear this stuff thing, but it doesn't help to process properly worked out. So that when you come back to members, you say to members, this is how long this testing is going to do, this is what is expected of this testing. That is very crucial, because when we go to the budget vote, we want to talk about something that we understand ourselves. And I did say to you that we want to avoid to process things only for the defense, as if there's no pronouncement that defense and the military veterans are one formation now, and we need to be able to be aligned to that. If we don't emphasize that as parliament, we would then have to keep up and in neutral language in a different way. And that is very dangerous for society, because we know desperate issues that have been created by the announcement that there will be a Ministry of Veterans Department. And people are day in, day out trying to inquire that what does it mean? And you know, one thing that Treasury has helped us is to say there is information in the department. There has been work that has been done in the past. But it seems as if that work has not yet been collected and been put together to assist into presenting a face and something tangible that the department is going to put in front of the task team. Now, it seems as if the task team, the way we are talking, will be the task team itself identify what to do. Now, you know, it can take 10 years. And we don't want to be that serious. We don't want to create an entity that is going to have life to itself, that is called a task team, and then decide on its own mandate and will continue to live on its own. That would be a waste of taxpayers' money. Because it won't be able to go out and give answers to what is being expected. So I'm really saying that it's a challenge. We are not going to lose sight of it as this parliamentary group. We would want to sit on you to come back as fast as request as you can with something more detailed that could give, in essence, to us something that what is it that is going to happen and how long is that lifespan of that task. It can't be longer than creation, but we want you to have a department. It has things we are not going to have. You see, people are having the questions you could hear. People are asking questions that are related to the pension. People, the Honorable says that, God says, it's so much important that how you interrelate it to a developmental state, you see, its own expenditure. Now, if the department is not ready, the department is not conceived, quite at an early stage, so that we can all, as a collective, see what we can do. But if the department, it's like the policy that the Honorable is asking. 1996, we have been having those those policies there. There hasn't been much done, or if ever there's been done, nothing has come to Parliament to concretize and consolidate that, you see. Now, that's the length of how the department works. Makes a good idea, good suggestion, it will live on for a very long time. We don't want a something that is going to work in that way. As I was saying to you, we also want you to finalize this thing of the policy so that we could see exactly this update, we could see where we are fitting into this operation. This thing of operating without policy is very dangerous for this organization called the defense itself. So I would really want to really persuade you as a department to start putting your mind together and apply your mind more faster, because also Treasury sitting there, we are going to put a blame on them, but they can't put money when there's no paperwork. There's no paperwork, that's what they're saying, there's no paperwork. It's an inter-exchange of ideas. You tell us about the task team, we listen, but it's an idea. There's no paperwork, because if we had paperwork, we would have included it into one page and presented it to us here today. You don't have paperwork, and it's very dangerous when there's no paperwork. We might end up dancing with something that is not going anywhere. I wanted to close it, but I can leave you. Yes, no.
Before you close,
I'll do this member, and then I'll do this.
Before you close, Commissioner, perhaps the secretary was still going to answer my question if you are not interrupted. Mm. But I think he's more qualified than the gentleman from the Treasury. On that question, which I think I have not been answered, the liberation struggle comrades, men and women, are they covered by that act of 1999? It's a very simple question. Yes or no? I need to know that. The chairperson told me I was going to speak on the 26th. I need to prepare myself. I need to know whether they are covered or not covered. Then I can take it from there.
Chair, let me make a broad statement. The question of military veterans is new. It's very important. The questions that the members are raising are valid, and I'm sure that this military veterans are going to consume much of our time during the course of the next 5 years. But I would not But what I would not want is for the issue of military veterans to distract us from what I think is an equal, perhaps even more important priority, and that is the state of readiness of the South African National Defence Force. And concretely, since we have 50 minutes to go, to illustrate. First, I mean, I would like to know how many pilots we have, how many vacancies there are, and what the percentage vacancy rate is. I would want to know what the plan is to recruit or retain the pilots, and this is directed to the Honourable, to Human Resources. And I would want to know what the cost of that plan is in this budget, because it doesn't seem to me that, in fact, that aspect is covered. So that's on the vacancy rate. But also, let me take you to page 58 of the strategic plan. I mean, if you delve into these documents, it seems that the Air Force budgeted for 36,000 odd hours in the previous financial year. And if you do a rough calculation, it looks like the Defence Force has budgeted about 27,000 flying hours in this financial year. Now, of those flying hours, 950 of those flying hours are allocated to the air combat capability, presumably our fighters. That's roughly 3.5% of the hours. And the same number of hours, 950 hours, are allocated through the next successive financial year. Now, is it correct then to infer that, in fact, what we have done in our strategic defense package is that we've purchased aircraft which we cannot fly because we have a shortage of pilots and because we have not budgeted sufficient hours for those aircraft? I mean, 950 hours, Chair, strikes me as a very, very low number.
Now is the department to answer all these questions. I'll give you enough time now. You take it. Sector. Thank you, Chair. To start with the question by Honourable Member Mlangeni, the answer is yes. The military veterans from the non-traditional forces, home controversy, also known as MK, and the Albanian People's Liberation Army, are covered in the Military Veterans Affairs Act of 1999. As well as all others. And the definition even of who is a military veteran is well spelled out in the Act. The creation of the Federation or the Association, the South African National Military Veteran Association, would not have been possible if there had not been those legislative pronouncements that already started in the Act in 1999. So it was therefore a combination of that entire process, which also covers members of the statutory forces, that is the former SADF, former TDVC armed forces, all covered within that. And they actually, all of them make up the leadership of the South African National Military Veterans Association. Now, Chair, we agree with the comments remarks made by Honourable Members with respect to the sustainable utilization of resources and then also utilization of the veterans and expanding then on the conceptualization of how do we roll out what has been spelled out in the State of the Nation address. The issue of the establishment of a database for military veterans. Yes, that is a matter that is underway. There is a database now in the directory, but there is more work that is continuing now that this entity is going to be a department or something else, but definitely more than the directory that we have within that. Also, we concur that we need to look at the land and buildings for our facilities. In terms of utilization thereof, we do engage with other departments as well within this regard, primarily the police services and so on. The matter of the non-statutory force pensions and the discrepancies, that is a point that we concede and have engaged treasury as well as cabinet about, and there has been that in principle approval that we need to correct the imbalance, the inequity, and to actually speed up the process. Discussions are underway, and in fact, working out a plan to fully implement the decision of cabinet to ensure parity with respect to national security force pension. And these are ongoing with the government employees pension fund. On the question of the baseline allocations, the bias towards air defense, why that is not landward. I don't know if the chief of corporate staff can be able to respond. Or let me give it to the CFO and then the chief of corporate staff can respond. CFO.
Thank you, sir. The bias in terms of the air defense program is mainly in line with the additional funds that we receive from national treasury. For the 9-10 financial year, we receive additional funding in terms of finishing off the work on the water project. And we also receive half a billion rand.
Did I hear me? Okay. Let me. Pardon me. I was saying the bias in terms of funding for the two programs between the air defense and the land war is mainly due to additional funding that we received from National Treasury in terms of firstly the Waterloo Air Base runway that we must finish for the 9-10 financial year. And also, we received additional money for the A400M strategic liquid capability. That was half a billion. That's why the skew allocation when you look at the previous year. Let me then move on, Chairperson, if you will allow me. To address the issue of the special defense account, whether we could take the additional funds, unused funds in the special defense account to fund the military veterans department or whatever shape it will take. I just want us to just note that the special defense account services multi-year projects. If in a particular year the milestones have not been delivered on by supply, we have rollovers. And we try in the department to reprioritize where we know there's going to be cash flow. If the industry does not deliver, then we have rollovers in the special defense account. The Act allows for it. Now, for Treasury to maybe mention that we could take the money in the special defense account to fund this, the Honorable Lord, I just want to state that we have agreed with Treasury that as the special defense packages taper off around 2011-2012, they are going to leave their allocation, they are part of the allocation in our baseline, and we are going to use that to recapitalize and modernize the army. Now, to take that and try and allocate it to the military veterans organization will then mean we must then go back to them and try and get money to recapitalize the army. The second issue is that in the special defense account, there is a little bit of fat, as the honorable member alluded to, but Treasury takes that money away. That money is mainly due to foreign exchange losses and gains. When the rate of exchange moves against us, we then tell Treasury that we've got a foreign exchange loss, and they give us the money to make good the loss. If the rand strengthens and we've got a foreign exchange gain, Treasury takes the money. Last year they took 1.1 billion in terms of foreign exchange losses and gains. So in actual fact, there isn't any threat in the DOT allocation. Treasury takes the money back. Thank you, sir.
Well, two things, just in some clarity. JD is the chief financial officer, is that correct? The chief financial officer. Can I just for clarity say, are you saying that the money allocated to the Gripen project and the A400M project, both of whose milestones I understand have been delayed, that you are reallocating that money to recapitalize land with the tax? Is that a correct understanding of what you said or incorrect? And then just a second question, while you're talking about foreign exchange rate adjustments, I understand from page 21 of the strategic business plan that there was a roughly 3.7 billion rand increase in the budget, 2.298 billion rand of which was swallowed up by a foreign exchange adjustment. Does that mean, again, I'm not an economist, that the strategic defense procurement program is costing the public 2.298 billion rand more as a result of the depreciation of the rand?
Firstly, to respond to the first question, no, your understanding is not correct. The additional funds that we receive from Treasury are reinvested. If they say the money is for the A400, we just stay there for the A400. We don't use it for anything else. But in the special defense account, there are strategic defense packages and other projects. So the SDPs are reinvested, other projects are not, and we can see where there's going to be cash flow, and we reprioritize what we call the SCAM in the department, our strategic capital acquisition master plan. The second part, to maybe simplistically say, the SDPs are costing the public 2 billion more. We'll be looking at it simplistically, because if there is a foreign exchange gain, if there is a gain, government benefits from that.
But I'm correct.
Even answer the question. Can you take a little bit serious?
Pardon me, sir?
Can you take a little bit serious? Do you want to get to understand? Is there a lot of
No, as I said, for example, if the rand is at 8.10 to the dollar or to the euro, we pay at that rate. If it deteriorates to 12 or 13, we pay at that rate. So it just depends on where the payment falls. And if the rent is against us, we take it as a foreign exchange loss. It does not actually mean that the government is losing, because rates of exchange move up and down on an hourly basis or every minute, so to speak. So if it's at 8.10 and we make a payment, we've made a gain.
But in this case, we made a loss.
Yes, we did.
For 2 billion.
1.1 billion. That's true.
Yeah, professor.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm new in this committee. I'll be asking my first two maiden questions. My name is Mr. Kololo. I've got two quick questions here. With regard to our defense, our combat readiness as a country, I just want to find out from the department if really, I know that we don't have any enemy currently, we've got friends all over, but if we could be attacked maybe by some unforeseen enemy somewhere, are we ready to defend our people here in this country? The second one would be on the question of the directory, the database. They say the department is having that data for the personnel of the ex-combatants and all that. So I just want to find out if are they using to get this data? Is it from the previous CPR, the certified personnel register that you're going to use to get that data? Are you using that same old CPR list or not? And then on the time frame about the starting chair, I think really we need, before we adjourn this meeting, we need to have a specific date exactly as to how long are they going to come back to us with regard to the work that will be done by the task team that has been appointed. I would appreciate that. Thank you very much.
So if Gaddafi or Mugabe attempt to attack us, we are more than ready to keep.
Thank you very much. If I may continue, then we'll pick up on the questions that came now later on once we've covered the other list of the questions. Now, please, can you continue to pick up from where we left off? Then we'll also then mop up with the last batch of questions. So on the issue of what services are being offered to military veterans, so the question from Honorable Member with the left now. Can we attract a Chief HR to just briefly touch on that in terms of this, whatever services that are being offered to the veterans currently?
Well, the first issue probably is just to look at who actually does qualify as a military veteran. Presently, we are telling that within the standard South African National Military Veterans Association, you will find that most formations, including those who are involved in the liberation work, are also part of that. But there is one from ASLAPO, which officially is not necessarily included, but within SAMBA is participating. So this is one we're dealing with, try to bring them on board through the necessary channels. And then two, in terms of the Act, we are expected in the Ministry to have an advisory board which advises the Minister. And that board is not yet in place. Hence, when after the launch of SANVA, we were moving towards having the executive of SANVA probably acknowledge and recognize as that board to do the actual advisory services to the Minister of Defense. Two, the Act speaks of the agency. We are not yet there in terms of finally saying do we have an agency or not, but we've been benchmarking and trying to look at what does it supposed to mean and where does it supposed to lie and what is it supposed to do. And three, in terms of the data, the database, we are challenged in terms of tracing the individuals and getting to know where they are because their addresses keep changing. So that's one challenge we have in terms of the database.
but we are working very closely with the various associations to assist us in tracing. But unfortunately, on their side too, they haven't been that much helpful. Three, one of the other main services we are looking at, and I think the Military Council, which is a senior body in the SANDF and the PDSC, we're looking at how best to support the military veterans when it comes to health services so that they and their dependents can also benefit. I think we've been working with that. And the Sergeant General and myself have been tasked to work on that one. Three, the Department of Housing, which is called the Department of Humanitarian Settlement now, also has played a big role in terms of assisting the members when it comes to allocation of houses. As of early this year, we had about 1,000 of those military veterans who were in need of houses, supported by the Department of Housing. And we are working again with the various provincial governments in relation with various number of projects when it comes to small, medium business enterprises. So we have in the agricultural sector, and we have some engaged in some manufacturing of small things. The challenge at this stage is the capacity on our side, because the directors we're talking about, probably we're talking about between 5 and 8 people who then must support and deal with this issue. The other aspect through you, Chair, is the issue of the maintenance of grades of military veterans, especially those you we find in some of the African states. We are also working on that one. One would venture to say we have to work with the kind of public work in respect of Uganda to try and remove some remains from where they are and rebury them with the others within the former camp of the MK which was there. And we're working again with both our government and government of Uganda in establishing a leadership or Kambo leadership school in Uganda. So these are the activities. Lastly, we have worked closely again with the SANVA, Rucha, and the Department of Labor when it comes to the skills fund. And they have given us, that is, they being the military veterans, the areas of interest when it comes to their training. And then we have given them forms, they've completed those forms, and we've given them to the Department of Labor. So that together with the military veterans, we get to know what areas of interest when it comes to training they want to be empowered in. So this is what we're working on in terms of the kind of services. But this is not an exhaustive list, because they've just been formulated, and we're again looking at developing further whatever areas they might be interested in. Thank you, Chair.
It seems like that's what you want us to do. The one who prefer is to put all that information together and put it so that you can at least know what is exactly happening. You know, this piecemeal of information that is coming across is not helping where we are coming from. We are taking this thing of the military veteran very seriously, and we want you to be able to put that together into it. Even if it's a mandate that has to give us the information, how that thing is going to work. Well, this piecemeal of information is not helping members. That's why the meeting decides not to go forward over here. It keeps on coming back. There's some information that comes up when presentations have been done. So I was really persuaded to move. As the Honorable was saying, that it's not only the military veterans that you are looking at, but it's quite clear that there's a lot of scattered information now. It keeps on coming up, and it takes members to keep on coming back to you around this particular area. You would want to address the whole department, even if you want to know if there's what's happening. But if it's going to be like this, it's going to create a problem in how we conduct our meetings and how we conduct our relations. Please, I would ask people to make presentations. and then when we come, you know exactly what progress is taking place within the department around this particular area. Okay. Then try to answer other questions. We've not answered all the questions. So we're going step by step, and that was the last part one by another member. The last of which is how do we see the assessment? Let me jump to the five one. I'm not the one who allowed you to speak in the department. It's your chief. I don't want you to point to me, but I want you to point to him so that he gives you an opportunity to talk. But I don't know which time you talk. If I start running all over, issues are going to come up in different ways. Or do I want to say something?
All the shepherds, but he indicated that I would have to contribute one HR and finish. So that's why I just want to raise your attention. But we take seriously what you say. And although we've couched it within a top team approach, there has been a lot of work already taking place over even prior to the announcement. Like, for instance, I can say to you that of the 7,231 veterans, of which there are 3,014 spouse and 12,280 dependents, giving us a total of 22,525 veteran patient load, that the costing within the department is between 30 and 40 million per year, additional to the budget of the SEMS, and then we will be able to provide a comprehensive healthcare service for those on the list. At the same level as that provided to any serving member of the SANDF. I'm just quoting that to say that while we understand the satisfaction, some of the work has been going, and then clearly there will be a case for certain quick gains, things to happen as a matter of top priority. I would propose that healthcare be considered, but this is a proposal I'll be making to the department, and I'm sure that they'll probably support it strongly as well. Just to reassure the committee that there is work that is going on. It's not as if that we're waiting. One of the big problems is that the issues of veterans also have to be, it's an inter-departmental thing. DPSA, Treasury also have to be involved as stakeholders because of the need to just pressure the authorities and mandate and the like. Just to sort those things out. So that's my small contribution. Thank you, Chair.
You see, I'm out of my experience. You know, when some presentations are made, at least I expect the military council to put its mind together and whatever comes to Parliament comes in a unified way. In the way it's coming across, it's fairly clear to my mind now that there hasn't been much discussion within the department around the new development that has taken place. And that is not correct. You know, it's not right. The sector must sit down in the whole collective and make sure that it preserves something that makes everybody to have made this contribution at that level and bring something that Parliament could appreciate as well as ongoing. But you see, my concern is when something is piecemeal, it does present a little bit of a problem if there hasn't been a collective way of working within the department around this particular area. And this is not what I want to come across as the impression and perception created that the department is not working as a collective. Unless there's something else like that. Okay, so that point is noted. We'll consolidate and come back to the committee. The other question was related to the assessment of the successes or failures of South Africa State Mission. Yes, we have had successes, but I wouldn't say failures, but just challenges with respect to our presentation. And this is in a variety of areas. We can give the detail of that presentation dedicated by Parliament to that topic of the case support operation. The successes have been in all the missions where we've been tasked to deploy, as missions that are United Nations mandated, as well as African Union mandated, throughout, whether it's major deployment in the DRC, part of the United Nations mission in the DRC, or the African Union Special Task Force in Burundi, or the UN mission in Darfur, and so on. Some of the challenges relate to the methods of investment, equipment, and the logistics turnaround. But we can give details, more details for this The question by Honorable Member Mkashede on the which other non-profit does the Department of Defense collaborate with, just to mention but a few, in addition to the one that we mentioned, the Red Cross Society, it's the AMSCO, the Armament Corporation, which is our entity, the Reserve Force Council, for which there is also a transfer payment, and they are also covered in the legislation, in the Defense Act. The SACETA, that is that sector education and training, which we are part of, and a percentage of the salary gets transferred, and then they must then look at the skills training and development as part of the Skills Development Act. And then the First Aid League, we also collaborate with them and also give them some bit of money. And then the St. John's Ambulance, we collaborate with St. John's Ambulance in terms of giving them a grant, every financial aid, and actually a specific program that we collaborate with them on. On the challenges with respect to the memorandum of understanding, what those challenges are. The challenges are that we are not in a position to settle all of the memorandum of understanding that we have entered into since 1994, if I go back that far, and some more recently and so on. But we have entered into the process of prioritizing and reprioritizing. In fact, this is a matter that affects not only defense, but all of government in these various facets. But we are in the process to prioritize and reprioritize. Of course, our priority is within the SADC and the African Union, but we have many others beyond that. On the matter of collaboration with the South African police on borderline control, and we have been involved with in collaboration with the police in borderline control. We received a directive about 5 years ago that by 1st of April 2009 we needed to scale it down and in fact totally completed that process of withdrawal from that support to the police in borderline control specifically. We then put into place plans to ensure that we reached that target. However, before the period expired, effectively the 31st of March 2009, there had been ongoing discussions in terms of reviewing that particular decision. And the decision was then taken that by the executive that the Defense Force should continue in that capacity, especially in light of the Confederation Cup and the Soccer World Cup next year. But there must still be plans to look at how do we go forward into the future. But for now, that is what the directive is. The matter of the Honorable Member, mainly on the defense policy void, whether there's any intention to produce a green paper or any other. I wouldn't say there's a void. There is no void. We are working on the basis of that original white paper of 1996. Whatever will come out, the main document will still be that one. But based on that, given that there have been significant changes in the strategic environment and so on, there is a draft document that will be presented before the Parliament once it has been cleared with Cabinet, which is captioned as the defense update. We've now gone on to revise that further to now be the defense strategy in 2010-2030, which will look at what is going to be the future size and shape and role and function of the defense force, looking forward in that future, what equipment it should have, and so on. and also what will be the budget allocation and cost of a defense force at that period. All of that will be coming to Parliament in the near future once it has been cleared and finalized with the cabinet, as well as in consultation, because we are working interactively with other departments of state as key stakeholders, and then we will table that before you. We had planned actually that we should do that before the end of this calendar year. Do that before Parliament. It's a matter that we had already started discussing in the previous Parliament. Now, in terms of the questions by the Honourable Member Boy on the chair, on the issue of with the forthcoming landlord capability recapitalization or acquisition, what measures will be taken or have been taken to avoid irregularities of the strategic defense packages in terms of acquirements. We have put measures in place since Parliament tabled their report of the joint investigation team into the strategic defense package and are actually working in line with and in accordance with those recommendations that were made by the joint investigation team. We actually appeared again through the one of the parliamentary committees just before the end of the third parliament, further outlining what steps or measures we were putting in place with respect to ensuring that the irregularities that happened have not happened. And then on the time frames, well, it's a question that has been asked before about the establishment of the military veterans entity. We will have to come back on that. Once again, I do not want that we make a pronouncement and then we are held to it. That we are not able to deliver on that. But we will certainly come back to that. The matter of absorption of the youth in the military skills development system, we do continue to absorb the youth in the military skills development system, and we are ready to give the details about the different intakes of youth that we are taking into service as part of the military skills development system. We should say that it's actually part of our APEX priorities that we're implementing. The question by Honorable Member Nkwang on the risks with respect to loss of skills, I think that was answered earlier on by the colleague. Then Honorable Member, on the state of readiness, Honorable Member, and the state of readiness is a presentation of its own, and we would wish to do that in a closed session with the committee. We are ready to do that at the earliest possible time when the committee demands that we can be ready to appear before the committee. Just still on the issues, the comments raised by the Honorable Member, with respect to the explanation on the foreign exchange adjustment, and it should be indicated that the prices, SDP prices, were fixed at the time of acquisition. And of course, payment, because it's in foreign exchange, then is impacted upon by the rate of exchange at that time. There were years where we actually made significant gains because of a strong currency. So it should be looked at within that context. What is the prevailing rate at that particular point when you are paying? The last question, I think it was by Honorable Member Kololo on whether with an enemy in the background, are we ready to defend the people? Yes, again, to reiterate the words of Honorable Mlangi, yes, we are ready. We are ready and able to defend the people with respect to that. And then the other question on the database, I think that has already been dealt with. Thank you, Chair. For now. another person wants to have something, I'm going to cut back. You're fine.
Okay.
Any other question? We have about 10 minutes left. I'll just pose you and follow along.
Chair, just 2 points. My question concerning the South African airport, the vacancy rate and flying hours was not responded to. And just a note, while you were out of the room, the Secretary of Defence responded to my question about the state of readiness of the SANDF. He mentioned that a briefing was ready to go and that he would be happy to brief this committee in closed session. My point to you would be, would it be possible to fit that briefing in before the budget vote next week? That's the first question. And the second thing I'd just like to place on record that I have a difficulty with a meeting like that taking place in closed session. I believe that it's in the public interest to know what the state of the state readiness of the Defence Force is, and it's in fact in the Defence Force's interest for the public to know what the state of readiness of the SANDF is. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Mine actually will be in connection with the re-burial of the heroes that the President fell on in action in foreign countries. There was talk of of erecting a remembrance wall by the Department of Arts and Culture together with the Freedom Park in the said parliament. I was still serving in the Arts and Culture then. So now the question was who is supposed to be put on that wall of remembrance? So there was a debate over that. So I just wanted to find out from the department here if there was any collaboration with regard to that as to who is supposed to be put on that wall of remembrance that could be erected somewhere in the Freedom Park, because there was debate that no, those who are serving in the MK and AFLA should be put up there, and those who are serving in the previous regime should be put there. So I just wanted to find out if there was any collaboration to that effect with the Department of Arts and Culture. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you will answer some of these questions. Honorable, you know, it's been the difficulty of this committee when it comes to that area where to deal with the readiness of the defense itself. It's really about the defense, and it's about the security of the country. And it's very difficult to make it public, you see, because then, you know, if you take that information to the public, it then becomes useless of the defense and its own enemies that are looking at it. What do they expect from the defense? That's the difficulty. So, throughout the history of the committee, it has been kept as an area where it's just meant for members of parliament to make them aware. And then what members say outside is something different, but it's really between the chief of defense and the parliamentary committee. That's how it has been kept for years.
With respect, and I think this is something we can debate outside this chamber, I do, Chair, respectfully disagree, and I'll face my argument for you.
No, I really accept it, and I mean, the rapport while they're working is that we should always interchange and share some experiences and advice to each other. I would really talk to you more about it. I would also have to check again with the parliamentary rule how to handle that particular matter itself. Okay. But you can answer the other questions, sir. But thanks for that, Honorable. It's very much important.
Thanks, Chair. On the matter of the role of remembrance and for self, I'd like to ask Chief Ayers to deal with that in terms of the development in that field. How long ago?
Well, I would venture to say there isn't been any real interaction in trying to have names
in the wall of liberation that we don't park from our side. But now that you mentioned, we'll look at that, and probably before my time, somebody has done something. But within a short period of time when I was there, nothing has come up.
Yes, sir. We are done. You sent me the other one. I think already. The question that keeps on coming back about the Air Force. You said to me that people from the Air Force. Can they answer this question? Chief of Corporate Staff can tell you that. Yeah. Is that what you were looking for, sir?
Yes, it was. I had a very specific question about the South African Air Force in respect of the vacancy and in respect of flying hours. And I have not had a response to my question.
Okay, then it's fine. So, two agencies and the flying agencies. No, you can send it back.
Honorable Chair, honorable member. On the vacancy rate, I don't know what the current vacancy is today, so I will provide it the committee by the committee secretary. But we are training pilots for our needs, and our training schedule is according to our needs and the Air Force needs and Air Force specific needs, not coupled to the funds allocation. We are working on different alternatives to find solutions, for instance, side-by-side training, and not the current Astra, you know, which is much more expensive. We have outsourced already a certain of our helicopter training, which is much cheaper, and we contain control regarding the output. So currently, training of pilots is on track, sir. We train sufficiently to our needs, but there is also a big drive, as it was indicated earlier, that there are many people from the private sector, but also from other countries, recruiting from us. For that matter, we have lost a squadron commander, the quality control officer in the squadron, the chief instructor in one squadron, all leaving South Africa for Australia throughout this year. So at this moment in time, Honorable Chair, the current the vacancy rate, I cannot provide straight away, but we can provide it in writing. But likewise, there is certain sensitivity regarding our readiness, and it must be handled with due respect by yourself the way you want to direct it. On flying hours, the Honorable Secretary mentioned that we have DPDEC, and I chaired the DPDEC just last week, interrogating the South African Air Force on these specific hours. As I indicated earlier, they are looking into alternatives, how to find better solutions, where I already indicated side-by-side trainers, outsourcing of helicopter pilots, etc., etc. The amount of flying hours for the combat grouping is according to their plan and their build-up. We only received the first few Griffins inside the country. The rest are still to be delivered. Likewise, we have received all our new light utility helicopters, and we are utilizing them optimally. For that reason, we are going to make proposals to phase out some of the older helicopters, which is on our inventory at this moment in time. But I can give you the assurance, Honorable Chair, that the hours worked out by the Air Force, by the professionals in the Air Force, is according to the Air Force needs and their predictions at this moment in time, and that is why it is captured in the strategic business plan as it is captured.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. If you're on that call, I had earlier on asked about the racial and the gender constitution, and even the physical challenge, you know. But of course, I zeroed in on the Air Force and the engineering. And through you, Honorable Chair, if that information is not readily available, well, I'll be delighted if next time if it is provided. Thank you.
Chair, I mean, through the Secretary of Defense, do we or do we not have a shortage of pilots? That's the first question. The second question is, do I understand through the Secretary of Defense that 950 hours of flying for our air combat capability is in the Chief of the South African Air Force and the squadron commander that's responsible for air combat? 950 hours is optimal, given the number of aircraft. I cannot believe that that is the case. It strikes me that our Air Force is on the ground, not in the air.
Your first question of do we or do we not have a shortage of pilots? Yes, we do, in different areas, taking note that we have different categories of transport, fighter, helicopter, and so on. But I cannot give you the figure now, but we do, largely due to the hemorrhage that we are receiving from that loss of scarcity in that. That is the problem that we continue to address.
So I confirm we do have a shortage, but the numbers as requested, I will provide to you by Friday.
Well, through you, you've already indicated that at least we must try to speak one voice, so I won't go beyond what has already been said. I will keep it up. Thank you.
Now, give us the information if you do have it.
I support that, yes.
I'm trying to smuggle ourselves. Honorable members, it's lunchtime now, and we will come to the end of this particular meeting. The meetings have just suggested that the issues that you are raising, honorable, I would work out with the committee to see if ever we could have another session of, so that we could round up our own understanding of the challenges that we face with. The information that has been sent to Mpasha and our sit on the department will have to make it a little bit available. What we are supposed to be doing next week, now that I've consulted, they are giving us Tuesday, they have consideration of committee report on ballot vote, formulation, and recommendation. And then Wednesday again, it's the finalization of that. So we do have meetings coming up next week, twice of them. So I would have to prepare within those meetings that at least we still have the department to come back and get some of the answers that they're looking for. That's part of the preparation. Department,
thank you for that. Chair, my colleague and I are available 20 hours a day.
I know. If you're not available, I'll go and hunt you. Department, we want to thank you for coming to the meeting. But as I'm saying, that we just have to work out with the parliamentary committee. We'd love you to come back with some of the heads, as I've indicated. We don't want to see them on the budget vote. We'd want to see them earlier than that. So maybe we should bring them on Tuesday, if you can. I mean the chief of defense. I mean the head of maritime. I mean the head of the Air Force. Because I mean, they might help us with some of the questions that they're asking. The members are new, they want to see physically who they are talking to and who are these people. It's very much important. I understand on your side, but here in Parliament, I would love to see those people on Tuesday. If the department can really prepare for us to come and help them here, and we would finalize some of the questions that we have. We are debating on the 26th. That is on Friday, which means we finish up our budget vote. So that's why I'm trying to make sure that members themselves get satisfaction in their own interaction with the department, and then they could be able to know and understand the challenges that the department is going through. Is that okay? Thank you. Yes, we will have to look how we juggle around. I'm aware that, in fact, both myself and the Chief of the Defense was have an engagement with the Interstate Defense and Security Committee of SADC, which is an annual scheduled meeting. That they're going to be sitting from the 25th to the 23rd. The 23rd is the final day of that session, which comes in a session which is chaired by the Minister of Defense. The first two days is the Chief of Defense and the second Chief of Defense. We'll try and see what we can do.
Chair, I'd like to be very clear with what I'm proposing. I'm proposing that before the budget vote on Friday, that this committee receives a full briefing in public, in other words, an open session on the state of readiness of the South African National Defence Force.
That there are certain matters which cannot be discussed in public. Why do you speak on such matters?
No. Fine, let me put it
with respect. We are part of a constitutional democracy where we think that openness or transparency is morally superior to secrecy. And I believe that it is in the public interest and in the Defence Force's interest that we receive a full briefing on the state of readiness of the South African National Defence Force.
I'm saying that issue, because there are rules in Parliament, I have to consult the rules of Parliament, and it has to be taken through that process. And I'm saying that that has been guiding us. I don't want it to become a fighting challenge here. I'll just consult the rules and make you aware what the rules of Parliament are saying, which all of us are in committed to, that we have to uphold it. So I just have to do that consultation. That we should also give each other just to let people express their point of view, whatever it is. Let me handle it within the committee and with respect to each member. I just want to persuade members not to keep them up about these issues. It's still a long way. We still have got 5 years to go together. And we have to keep each other together. But challenges are always good to conflict. But I was really concerned that we let you know by the end of the day today that what the collective does not say in relation to that particular matter. Sadiq would have to consult over this matter. I understand what you're saying, but I still want to persuade you to get some of them to come. I'll just talk about it. But thanks for coming today. And I also want to thank the minister's staff for being patient with us. We hope you'll be able to stay here for quite a longer time with us and advise us sometimes on some of the issues that you think we are quite unaware of. But thanks for coming. And thanks to Treasury for coming to us. We'll always keep this relationship as we've had with you over a number of years now. So that you, sometimes our own members are going to come to you individually. Feel free to interact and talk to them. But thanks for keeping and being around. And all the people that are here, thank you. There is a finger lunch as you are going out here. You can just wrap your fingers around and have something to do. Thanks a lot. Bye. Thank you, sir.